Hello and welcome
to Sort of the Story.
I'm Janie.
And I'm Max.
And this is the podcast where we tell each other stories like fairy tales and folk tales and mythology.
And also,
you are here. Wow, welcome. Welcome to the pod. Max, we got an email from a listener, which you guys could also do if you wanted at sortofthestory@gmail.com. But we got an email from a listener that as I was reading it, two times they gave us like two little like, hey, I'm listening to the podcast and you asked this question and here's this thing. And both times I went, oh, out loud to myself. So I thought I would read you some of it.
Really quickly, this podcast is not for children.
It's, you know what? It's not. But if you want to listen to an email, I mean, I suppose you can, you fucking nerds.
What kind of kid wants to listen to an email?
Children want to listen to emails. I know.
Children crave emails.
Children crave the emails. I feel like, who invented email?
Stephen Email.
Steemail.
He pitched that and they were like, no, that's
the
dumb.
Children, they crave the emails. Okay. So this is from Jenna Rose. Jenna says, I recently re-listened to episode 59 and in the story, A Tiny Butler. Remember the Tiny Butler story?
To Hammer and Hold.
To Hammer and Hold. Oh, I don't remember the details of it, but I remember being happy with A Tiny Butler.
Yeah.
There actually is a reason for why the princess was inexplicably naked in front of her dad at the end of the story. So she shows up naked.
Is it a good reason?
Her line.
I doubt it.
Her line, the whole world is like this. I haven't seen the world and I have not entered it yet. She wasn't naked to make a claim about her virginity or out of jealousy. The whole world is like this means everyone comes into the world naked when they are born. And I have not entered it yet is her saying she was literally hashtag born sexy yesterday.
Born sexy yesterday. I mean,
and I was like, oh, we didn't even consider that. We're like, why are you naked in front of your dad, you weirdo? It was a metaphor the
but
whole time.
But also it was the end of the story. Mm-hmm. Anyways,
yeah,
that's a really good reason, and thank you for
it. Makes a lot of sense. Did not even consider it. Also, I can't remember if it was the same episode or a few before, but Janie mentioned that she called Max's mom Starbra and then struggled to come up with a cool nickname for her dad, Michael. A little disappointed that the obvious answer of "my cool" didn't occur to you. And you know what, Jenna? I'm also disappointed.
That's real fair, Jenna.
All right. Well, there you go. Mike, if you're listening to this, you are now my cool. Anyway, that's the email. The two things that I was like, you guys, email us more.
Yeah.
Make us smarter.
My dad's recently started listening to the podcast. He's listened to it before, but he's never been like a listener.
Yeah.
But he's been driving a lot recently. And so he's been listening to the podcast with my mom while they drive.
Aww.
Because my mom is a dedicated fan.
Starbra.
And he called me and he was like, you know, I was just listening to one of the episodes of the podcast and it's like funny. It's like, thanks, Dad. He's like, aww. No, it's like really funny. I was like, yeah, no, I know. Thank you.
I talked to my...
That's on purpose.
That's actually the point of it. I don't know if you know this, but you could call this a comedy podcast.
You could.
You could if you wanted.
He won't, but...
Thank you, my cool. I talked to my dad yesterday, and my dad works in humanitarian demining for the government, and very serious job. Like, he's on a plane to Kyrgyzstan right now, I think. Like, he regularly, like, goes to the Middle East. So he's very, like, serious... formal job. And he was telling me, he's like, oh, did your mom tell you that a bunch of the younger people in my work follow your TikTok? Because I was talking about the podcast. And he was like, oh yeah, they all follow you and they listen. And I was like, huh? And he was like, yeah, sometimes they tell me what you're up to and the stuff that you're doing. And I was like, I'm sorry. Government workers are listening to my podcast, you said? And he was like, well, and I was like, can you tell them not to judge you based off of this dumb shit I say? It's like, I'm dumb there. And then I had to defend the podcast to be like, I think the conceit of the podcast is actually really good. It's like a gentle look into ethical folklorism. And we talk about that world cultures go around and folklore is a way to preserve cultures. But also, I'm dumb there. your coworkers are going to hear me say butthole and they're going to tell you about it. They're going to say you raised this. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. They watch your TikTok. They don't listen to your podcast. And I was like, good, tell them not to.
Tell them to stay away.
The government can't hear this.
I did have a moment while you were telling that story. You told me this yesterday, and I was like, haha, the government's listening to Janie. And then I just now realized that the government's also listening to me.
Yeah,
I'm also on the podcast.
We're Janie and Max.
Damn it, Janie.
Damn it, Max. Anyway, if you're part of the government, haha, we were just kidding about those weird things we said before.
Everything that we've ever said about a president was a joke.
Everything, except for that one that was hot. Guys, I can't remember which president I thought was hot. Can you please tell me? If you know, email us at sortofthestory@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to us on the Discord. Max, tell them how to make it to the Discord.
Sure.
Did you like that segue?
No.
Oh, Max. I'm crazy.
Three stars. If you want to join us on the Discord, you can join our Patreon. The link is in the show notes for this episode and every episode. For $3 a month, you can join us at the lower tier, which gives you access to the Discord, which includes you get to talk to us and hang out all the time. We've had a couple of new people join the Discord over the past couple of days, which is very fun, and we always love to have new people come in. Every single time that someone joins, I feel like I have to clarify that I'm Max and Janie's Janie because we both have silly names on the Discord. And also, I feel like I have to explain that to justify why I'm the most annoying person in the Discord.
No, I think I might be the most annoying person in
the Discord. We are the most annoying people in our Discord.
We are consistently very annoying in our own Discord. So, but you know what? It's fine. You're fine.
I want to protect you all from the embarrassment of sending us an email being like, hey, the person in your Discord, Reverend Dr. Boobs, MD, DDS, USD, is really weird. And then finding out that it's me, that would be so embarrassing for you. So just so you know, I'm Max and I'm the Reverend Dr. Boobs, MD, DDS, USD.
I'm Janet Breadhead. I think that's from a bonus episode. So only a very small amount of people know that reference. But I'm Janet Breadhead. And honestly, it took me 2 years to change my name because I was like, I just haven't found the right one. But I am Janet Breadhead.
You're Janet Breadhead. But if you'd like to hear that thing, which might be a bonus episode, you can join us at the other tier on our Patreon, which is $7 a month.
Wow.
And you get a full length big ol' bonus episode every month. You also get access to the back catalog of bonus episodes. Right now there are 13?
14.
14.
Isn't that cool?
It's pretty cool,
That's so cool.
Wow, the more you know. With that also includes access to the Discord, and we also have a couple of like weird episode extras and stuff on the Patreon.
And book club.
We have a book club in the Discord, so you can come and hang out with us for that, and we can move on to a different topic, and don't ask me if I've read the book. Leave me alone. I'm just living my life.
She's just trying to live, laugh, love her way. They're not reading Mountains Made of Glass.
I'm really excited to read it, but guys, the times they have been, they have been times.
The times have been times. You should bring it when we go to Hozier. And read it while listening to Hozier.
I'm not going to do that.
Max, do it!
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, he'll fall in love with you, you know, because you'll be reading at his concert. And he'll say, wow, she's so different.
I've been painting a ship recently. I feel like he would be more impressed by that.
Oh, bring your ship. Yeah. Hold it up.
I'm going to bring an easel and paint a ship in front of
him. I think you should hold up when everyone else is holding up their cell phones for a light. I think you should hold up your painting of a ship and just sway it back and forth.
A ship on tumultuous seas at sunset.
And then you just point at it and scream, Hozier, look at my ship. Hozier, look at her ship.
Hozier, look at my ship.
On the last bonus episode, P.S., I told the story Laura Silverbell, which is a haunted fairy story that is very, very scary.
Yes.
About a fairy luring a young girl. And it gave me nightmares. And I love it. And Max told The Bended Rocks, which is the story, like the origin story of the Maiden of the Mist cruise line.
At Niagara Falls.
It's cool as hell.
It's not a cruise line.
The cruise line. And when they take you a little cruise around the, around the falls.
And that's the true story behind the Virgin Atlantic cruise line.
You ever wonder what carnival is named after? Join the Patreon. Anyway, so it's fun. If you want to hear, I've told a couple of stories from Fearsome Fairies, Haunted Tales of the Fae, and they're all like Victorian fairy stories that feel a little bit like they're firsthand. It's like you could tell it's people who grew up in and around Ireland and like North England, and they're all like fucked up because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, very scary.
The moors and the fens.
The moors.
And the bogs.
Okay, anyway, that's a plug for the Patreon. Max, you did perfectly. Literally no notes. How does it feel to get complimented by your partner?
Egregious.
She's feeling difficult, people. She's having a day.
I'm always difficult.
Okay, with that, Max.
Janie.
I want to get started.
Okay.
I'm excited about my story today.
I can be down to get started.
Yeah, I've got a cool story to tell you.
Okay, but I'm going first, so you have to wait.
Well, what if I just start, though? Can you stop me?
Yes.
How?
I'll unplug your microphone.
Oh, that would fuck with the recording and really upset me. Yeah, please don't do that. I guess you can go first.
Thank you.
Okay, guys. We're going to come back in like 1 second to hear a tale from Max. Bye.
I think it's really funny that every time you do an outro to the intro where you're like, and anyways, we're going to get out of here, but we'll be right back. Don't be scared. It's going to happen. It'll be like between 1 and 3 seconds, and then we'll be right back. So don't worry, because we're coming back shortly. Okay, goodbye, but not for real. We'll be right back. Goodbye.
She a preparation queen. If you're about to undergo an apocalypse, come to me. I'm going to let you know what I'm going to do way before it happens.
It's always like 15 seconds of JD being like, goodbye, but not goodbye, and don't worry about it.
Please don't be scared, for we shall be back.
It takes so much longer than anything in the world.
I always think that we should have like a mini break music, like a 1 second long, like, ta-da, to like lead in, but we don't have that. So instead, I feel I have to justify the weird 1 to 2 second pause. Guys. Make us some 1 to 2 second outro music. Thank you. Maybe like a sting. Maybe it's like, butts.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be fun?
What if someone just farts into a microphone for 2 seconds?
I wouldn't like that.
You wouldn't like that?
No, because I would have to listen to it and then I would get tricked.
You would have to listen to it.
You're setting me up to have to listen to people farting into a microphone. Please don't do that to me.
Too late.
Next April Fool's is going to be lit.
Don't send Janie your farts. She'll be sad.
Okay.
Max is going to tell a story now.
Okay, don't bye. We'll be right back. Bye.
Don't be scared.
But
the story that I have for you today is Thumbelina.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. It's pretty fucked up.
I've never read it. The only thing I know is that one little version of Thumbelina that I know that she like, it's like almost in like the Miyazaki style of like illustration. And she lives with frogs for a while and... there's delicious food, like Miyazaki, to the point where I'm wondering if Miyazaki made a Thumbelina.
Maybe.
Anyway, there's like an evil frog who tries to marry her.
There is. So I'll just get into this. Yeah. Thumbelina is by Hans Christian Andersen. It was written in 1835. It's one of the earliest of Hans Christian Andersen's stories that was very popular. Mm-hmm. He published in his first collection of like bound stories.
Yeah.
Thumbelina is inspired by a recurring character in a lot of Western European folk tales, Tom Thumb.
Yes.
You've heard of Tom Thumb or Hop o' My Thumb.
Yes. Hop o' My Thumb, boy. That sounds bad.
It does sound bad. And it's Hop o' apostrophe My Thumb. And I don't know whether it's Hop on My Thumb or hop off My Thumb, but either way, it's not good.
Hop of My Thumb.
Hop of My Thumb?
Like a beer hop, maybe?
What?
It's like a beer hop. It's so small you can fit it on your thumb.
The Hop of My Thumb?
Yeah, I bet you anything that's probably what it is.
Okay, well, how about you Hop off My Thumb?
And I bet this is a drunken story. Somebody like made up while they were drunk one day.
Maybe.
Okay, well, new lore just dropped. You're welcome.
How about you fucking Hop off My Thumb?
Hey, Hop off My Thumb, bitch.
Tom Thumb, or Hop of My Thumb, was a recurring character in a lot of like Western European folk lore for a long time. It predates Thumbelina, but the idea is there's a little guy.
Yeah, just a little guy.
And that's the whole idea, is that what if there was a little guy? What if there was a little guy? And the whole idea of Thumbelina is, what if there was a little guy who was a girl?
What if that little guy was a girl?
You ever thought about that?
You never even thought to give the little guy boobs. And that's... sexist.
This story was originally published in Danish, which is Hans Christian Andersen's first language, obviously from Denmark. Thumbelina is the anglicized version of Tomalise, which just means a little lady who's the size of a thumb.
Like Fur Elise, which is a little lady that's so furry.
Ooh. What about... ooh. What about a tiny little lady werewolf?
Oh, Fur Elise! Guys,
what about that?
The Wattpad where?
More like Wearpad.
The Wearpad, please.
So, yeah, that's pretty much all the intro that you need to the story.
Why haven't they made a Wattpad just for werewolf smut called Wearpad? Copyright disorder of the story.
We're not allowed to do it. Why pad? Haven't they done that?
Why pad? Haven't they made a wear pad
out of Wattpad?
Wattpad? Are they thinking? When pad time travel stories. Okay, go ahead.
Who pad?
Who pad for Grinch smut? You ever wanted to get fucked by a Grinch? www.whopad.com.
I woke up this morning and I could not have possibly anticipated that I would hear the phrase Grinch smut.
I do feel like nobody's ever said, I think people have said some of this, but I do think that I may have just for the first time in the universe said the phrase, have you ever wanted to get fucked by the Grinch? www.whopad.com.
That one might be new.
And like the flap of a butterfly's wings, I'm going to be the fall of an empire.
Please.
Well, maybe our empire.
Hopefully.
Hey, if you're from the government, that was a joke. Don't tell my dad.
And if you're not from the government, it wasn't a joke.
Oh, no. If you're still from the government, she was joking.
Or was I?
Or was bad. It's so nerve-wracking to think that there are people in the government listening to this and telling my dad.
They do humanitarian demining. I'm pretty sure we're not in danger from them.
That they are humanitarians.
But oh my god, they eat humans.
Oh no.
Anyways, can I tell my goddamn story, please?
I mean, if you want to.
Okay. Thumbelina. There once was a woman. She was normal-sized. And she wanted a tiny little baby. She wanted a little baby to have and to hold for all her days, a child of her very own. And she went to a witch and she said, I would like a little baby all for myself. And the witch was like, give me 12 pennies. And the woman said, yes, here you go. Transaction complete.
Yeah.
And the witch gave her a single barley grain. Mm. And she was like, take this home, plant it. And what will grow from it is not barley. I know why you would think that, but it's not barley. It's going to be a weird little flower. So you're just going to plant it in a flower pot and it's going to grow and then you'll have your little baby. So the woman brings the barley grain home, plants it in a flower pot, and very quickly a beautiful flower sprouts out of the pot. It looks kind of like a tulip, but even when it is like fully bloomed, it hasn't completely unfurled. And so she's like, huh, that's weird. And she leans down and kisses the flower, as you do.
Yeah.
And then it unfurls all the way. And in the center of this like tulip-like flower is a tiny little lady.
It's so much pressure to keep that tiny little fly lady alive.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the plot of this story. That's the plot of Thumbelina.
Good. The end.
The story, though, it's unclear to me, because this is it's a work in translation. It was originally written in Danish. It's unclear to me whether this woman was like, I just want a tiny little baby. And the witch was like, haha, gotcha. It's going to be a tiny little baby. Or if this woman was like, I just want a baby, but it has to be tiny. I cannot possibly give birth to a baby small enough to satisfy what I desire.
I mean, this is how teacup poodles were invented.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, like, honestly, the way that this translation reads is, like, she wanted a very small child.
Yeah. It also, it makes you wonder, like, if she just wanted a baby, she could go out and just have a baby. But it sounds like she wanted a baby without the social stigma of being pregnant and then having a human-sized baby.
Yeah, she wanted a little.
She should have gotten, like, a chicken. Like, or, like, a dog. I guess a dog should have been my first thing I said. Chicken is a weird thing to tell.
She just wanted a baby, but she didn't want to get, like, a stroller or anything. She wanted to be able to carry her around in her pocket.
Fucking smart.
Yeah. Honestly, pretty smart. We love a portable baby.
Do we love a portable baby? You can't just throw that out there. You can't throw a portable baby. The wind, Max. The wind.
The wind. The wind is one of the antagonists in this story.
And in all stories.
So small. So this flower gives birth to a tiny, tiny, tiny little baby lady.
Oh, the invention of surrogacy.
Kind of. And the woman brings her tiny little baby woman home. And then, you've seen Marcel the Shell?
Yeah.
This is almost like word for word Marcel the Shell. Where it's like she brought her home and she named her Thumbelina because she was smaller than a thumb.
Yeah.
Her cradle is a little walnut shell that she sleeps in.
Yeah.
And she gets tucked in and her sheets are little violet petals. Like that's her little mattress. And then she sleeps underneath of a little rose petal and that's her blanket. And when she wants to go play, she goes, her mom fills up a plate with water And then she puts a bunch of cut flowers in the water. And then she puts a little tulip petal in the water. And then Thumbelina climbs into the tulip petal and sails around in the plate. And she uses two white horse hairs as oars while she's sailing around in the plate on a little flower because she's so small.
Oh, well, this is fun.
Yeah. There, it's like a full half page of him being like, she's so small.
How small is she?
She's so small that her sword is an eyelash.
I was thinking eyelash too. Oh. Maybe I was just looking into your eyes.
Oh my god.
Can I have money?
No. But like, she's so small.
How small is she?
She's so small that she can drown in a raindrop.
Wow.
She's so small. She's so small that when it gets really cold.
I'm about to do it again.
When it gets really cold, she wraps herself up in a yarn.
A yarn.
One yarn. Anyways, she's very small is the point of the story.
She sounds so small.
She's real small.
And she's smart.
She's not smart. Just small.
Baby.
That's also unclear in this story. They call her a tiny little woman. But they also call her the baby. But she sleeps in a cradle. But they keep being like, the tiny woman. I have questions. I'll come to that later.
Okay.
But it's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Another fact about Thumbelina is that she has a beautiful singing voice. Mm. The most beautiful singing voice in the whole wide world.
And too that bad doesn't... no one can hear it.
She's so small.
Bugs everywhere are like, yeah. Nice.
Literally, it says that in the story.
Oh, I was born to listen to this story. I'm getting so
literally,
well.
They're like, oh, and her little cradle is next to the window. And outside of the window, all of the honeybees, like, just hang out outside of her window so they can hear her sing. So, one night, she's sleeping in her little walnut shell that is her bed because she's so small.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a little gentle breeze coming in because there's a little, like, crack in the window that she sleeps next to. So, it's, like, a very nice, like, warm summer night. She's sleeping in her little walnut cradle, and a toad is hopping on her way home. And the toad hops past the window, and she sees this tiny little lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, wow. That would make a great bride for my toad son. And so she breaks the glass.
How?
And picks up the whole cradle with Thumbelina in it and carries it home. Plap, 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 plap.
Naughty toad.
Very rude toad. Just kidnapped this baby woman.
This baby woman. Honestly, if she was regular size, this would be a horror story. The baby woman came from a flower. The baby woman can drown in a raindrop.
So the toad picks up this cradle and carries it back to her house, which is, there's like a little stream by Thumbelina's mom's house.
Yeah.
And next to the stream is like a bog where it's like wet and muddy and gross. And that's where the toads live.
Yeah.
Because that's where toads live.
Sure.
So Mrs. Toad brings the cradle back to her marsh. And she goes and she wakes up her son, who is also a toad.
Yeah.
And he croaks at her. And she's like, shut up. You're going to wake her up. And he croaks at her again. And she's like, I know she's beautiful. That's why I brought her.
How come she speaks English?
That's a really great question. In the story, she speaks English and he does not. Also a really weird detail. They like have dialogue where she is like, well, obviously I brought her here to marry you. And he's like, brr. And she's like, well, she will learn to love you.
Jesus Christ.
Very weird.
It's so upsetting.
Yeah. Her son is even grosser than her. He's even slimier and nastier than Mrs. Toad.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he can't talk.
Well, listen. You don't have to speak English for somebody to love you, but you probably should be the same species.
Probably.
Maybe.
Probably.
Who knows what species Thumbelina even is? She's the baby woman.
She's the flower baby woman.
The baby woman who came from the flower.
So the toad mom brings Thumbelina to her nasty, slimy, sticky son. And she's like, this is going to be your wife. And the toad is like, murr. And she's like, great. And she's like, but we have to get her like locked down real quick because she could still get away. Like right now she's asleep in this walnut. Mm-hmm. But if she wakes up, she could like run away. So we got to make sure that she can't run away. Okay. Oh. romantic.
Yeah, she's bad. Toad Mama is evil.
So the Toad Mom and her Toad Son take the walnut and they swim out into the middle of the stream and they set the little walnut down on a lily pad in the middle of the stream mm-hmm. and then go back home to prepare for the wedding because they're like, she is so small. She's so small. Mm-hmm. How small is she? So small. they're like, she could run for a day and not reach the other side of the lily pad. She's not going anywhere. She's stuck there forever. If she fell in the stream, she would drown instantly.
It'd be like falling into an ocean.
Yeah. She can't possibly swim because she's so small. Can you even imagine how small?
Yeah. Have you seen those videos of people teaching newborn babies how to stay afloat? They just like throw them in the pool.
What?
Even I haven't seen this.
No.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
You should be giving baby swim classes, but newborn babies specifically already have the instinct to hold their breath. And so they will literally, you can see people, they'll put newborn babies in a pool and they'll film them underneath and they literally will like get themselves up to the top. Like it's just, they're still so fresh from being inside a womb that their natural instincts kick in.
That's really interesting. Don't do that. please don't do that because we said that.
Definitely.
Do some research and
find
figure out
a trained professional.
Yeah. Let's be really clear here. Don't throw your baby in the water.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
But yeah, but baby swim classes are like some of the most important things you can do for your babies, especially if you live in a house that has a pool or near a lake or something like that.
Yeah.
The kids fucking hate it because they're being tossed in and they've lost the instinct to hold their breath, but it teaches them how to like flip and like get themselves floating on their backs and then crying. And so usually they can survive until you hear them crying in the pool.
Oh,
yeah. Saves a lot of lives. PSA butts. That's our new sting.
Butt sting.
Ew.
Leave me alone, okay? So they put her on this lily pad. They Shanghai her out in the middle of a stream.
Yeah.
On a lily pad because she's so, so small. And they go back home to prepare for the wedding. Thumbelina wakes up in the morning and she finds herself in her little walnut cradle on a lily pad in the middle of the stream and just sits down and starts crying. Because she's like, well, I'll drown. I guess I'll just die.
Yeah, that's scary.
Pretty terrifying. But yeah, the first thing she does is cry for a while. And then the mama toad comes out and takes her walnut shell. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm going to go get this set up in the bridal chamber.
Ew.
Yeah, really gross and upsetting. And Thumbelina's like, wait, what are you going to do with me? And she's like, oh, you're going to marry my toad son. And then like off on the stream bank, her toad son's there like, she's like, I don't want to marry your toad son.
You do a really good toad sound.
Thank you.
I'm impressed.
I'm finding this out at the same time that you are.
Guys, there's not a real toad in the room. That's just Max.
I'm literally finding out right now that I'm really good at making toad sounds. I'm delighted.
Yeah.
This has made my whole weekend. So the mom toad like swims back to shore with the walnut shell and she's like, Thumbelina looks and she sees that they're arranging flowers around like a muddy hole in the ground that I guess is going to be her love nest with this gross old toad. And she sits down and starts crying again because she's like, I don't want to marry a toad. Especially not that one.
Yeah, gross.
He seems bad. And also he has a weird relationship with his mom that really kind of doesn't seem healthy.
You are marrying a mother-in-law and she seems bad.
Yeah, it seems weird. And also the fact that he can't talk, I'm like, oh, something feels weird about that.
No, it's all very weird. She was kidnapped.
Well, yeah, but I mean like in addition to that, I'm just saying the toads might be a little bit unstable.
Yeah, that's true.
In addition to being kidnappers. Mm-hmm. So Thumbelina starts crying again and just weeping and sobbing over she doesn't want to marry this toad. And in the stream, there are two little fish, little silver fish in the water. And they hear her crying about how she doesn't want to marry a toad.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's not fair. She shouldn't have to marry a toad.
Yeah.
And so the two little fish get to work gnawing through the lily pad stem.
Mm-hmm.
And they bite right through it. And the lily pad is like released and floats down the river.
Okay.
And the Melina's like, thank you. And they're like, blah, 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 blah. I'm not good at fish sounds.
Whoa.
Oh, that was really good. You're really good at fish sounds.
I have a confession. I already knew that. I'm world renowned for my...
Well, that one sounded a little bit like a turkey.
They're not all winners, Max. Okay, get over yourself.
All right. So Thumbelina is set free on her lily pad, and she floats downstream. Mm-hmm. She's floating downriver, and she's honestly, at this point, she's fine. She's like, probably should be scared because she's still like floating on a lily pad downriver away from her home and everything she's ever known. And also she's so small.
But she's escaping a pretty terrible exactly. situation.
So she's like pretty thrilled with her new situation where she's not having to marry a toad.
Yeah.
So she bobs down the river and just watches all of the like flowers on the bank and everything and all of the birds and the bugs and everything that are watching are all like, wow, she's so beautiful. And she's like, thank you. You know, the beautiful singing voice.
Wow. And it's so natural for her to just throw it into conversation.
And as she's floating downriver, a little white butterfly starts to kind of follow her. And he's like, you're beautiful. And she's aww. Like, thank you. And then he comes and lands on the lily pad. And she's like, come here. And then she takes her little sash and ties it around him. What? And then ties it to the leaf so that the leaf will go faster down the river.
Aww.
And he's like, ah! And she's like, thank you.
I have a family.
It really doesn't say anything about the butterfly's reaction to this, but she's just like, come here. And then like ties him to her vessel and maybe is like, okay, now cool fly.
He sounds like he's cool with it.
I wouldn't be cool with it.
But what if it was a beautiful baby woman who has a beautiful singing voice? Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Beautiful.
So she ties her little belt to this butterfly, and the butterfly flies downriver, so she's able to go even faster downriver to destinations unknown. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of like leans back on her little leaf, and she's like, wow, I really made it in the world.
Yeah.
Two things have happened to her.
I mean.
And as she's going downriver, the butterfly is flying overhead and everything, and she passes by a maybug, which is like it's also called a cockchafer. It's like a nasty bug.
Yeah, it is. Nobody wants a cockchafer.
I'm just going to Google it. I should have done this earlier. But
cockchafer is hilarious.
It is.
Who did this? Oh, it's a nasty little bug.
It's like a chibi cockroach, kind of. It's a beetle.
Okay. Yeah, it's just like a little beetle.
Mm-hmm. Or I guess it's probably like a June bug.
June bugs are big and stupid. I love June bugs. They're stupid as shit.
They're beetles though, right?
Yeah, but they're the stupidest kind. Like, honestly, and in the entire beetle world, June bugs are fucking idiots. Damn. We have a lot of June bugs in Missouri, and they can't, you just hear them smacking against the window all night long in the summer, and if you go outside, they just fucking smack against your face. And if you see them flying, you put up your hand and they're like, ah! You watch them get, like, genuinely confused if you're out there too. Like, go away. God, June bugs are so fucking stupid. Guys, sound out in the Discord. Do you think June bugs are fucking stupid?
I don't think I know much about the comparative intelligence of beetles, though.
Usually they don't, like, just smack it into you like, constantly.
Ladybugs.
One or two times it's like, okay, well, they flew onto my shirt, you know, because I'm very big and they didn't realize it was attached to a living thing. Or it's like, oh, a cockroach, like, accidentally, like, landed on me and it's gross and it doesn't care about me. Like, those seem like, it seems like they realize at some point they're on a person and they're just like, fuck you. What? June bugs are stupid. No thoughts in that little June bug head.
Well,
I have a lot of opinions today on June bugs.
Well, you're about to learn some things about Maybugs.
Okay. Oh, Maybugs.
Yeah. So a Maybug sees her, this beautiful tiny woman, mm-hmm. floating downstream on a leaf.
Yeah.
And he falls in love with her immediately. And he's like, I must have her. And he flies down from the tree that he's in. And he grabs her around the waist with his little pinchers.
Ew.
And flies up into the tree with her.
God, and men are bad in every species.
Yeah. And she screams and screams and screams. And she looks down and she watches the butterfly realize that she is gone and that he is still tied to the leaf and that he is going to starve to death.
Oh, no.
And she's like, oh, no. And then the story moves on.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He doesn't come back. That's not a character that comes
he's
back.
He's dead now.
Yeah, he's dead now.
R.I.P.
She sentenced him to death. So the Maybug flies up into the tops of the trees with Thumbelina in his clutches. Mm-hmm. And he brings her to his Maybug home. And he gives her little bits of honey from all of the flowers around and like hangs out with her. And she's like, this is actually pretty nice. This isn't so bad after all. Maybe mm-hmm. this could be fine. Could be good. he brings her like little capfuls, like acorn caps full of morning dew that she can sip on. And it's like beautiful and sunny. And he's got this nice little like bug nest. And she's like, oh, it's not bad. This might be fine. I might be fine with this actually. Yeah. Like kidnapping, maybe it's fine. Maybe this is normal.
Oh no.
And he always tells her how pretty she is, even though she's not a Maybug. He's like, you're so pretty. Your hair is so pretty and so weird, but like so pretty though. But like, I mean, like it would be cooler if it was feelers, but it's fine that it's hair and I think you're so pretty.
Thank you.
And he's like, I want to marry you. And she's like, I don't think I have any say in this. And he's like, great, let's meet my family. And he invites all of the other Maybugs over to meet his bride-to-be. Mm-hmm. And all of the lady Maybugs are like, oh my God, are you sure? Like, she's really gross. Like, look, she's got two legs. What happened? Disgusting.
What happened?
Why would you want that? Mm-hmm. She's just got no feelers. How's she supposed to feel? How?
That's true. How is she supposed to feel?
How is she supposed to feel if she got no feelers? She's like bald with no feelers. She looks like a tiny human person. Look at her. She's got a little, like, her waist, like, goes in.
Yeah.
She's probably starving. Ah. And her exoskeleton is so squishy, she'll die immediately. She's gross. Why would you want to marry her? And the Maybug is like, these are all actually really fair points, and I'm maybe reconsidering my choice.
Wow.
So basically all of the other lady Maybugs bully her and like talk shit about her to her husband-to-be until he's like, actually, I changed my mind. I don't think I want to marry you after all, and maybe you should leave. And she's like, okay, how do I leave? And he's like, I can take you away and like, don't come back. He flies her down to the base of the tree and leaves her in a daisy.
Aw.
And she's like, okay, well, I guess, I mean, it wasn't great, but it sucks that I'm ugly to, I guess, bugs.
Bugs think I'm ugly.
I mean, it's good that I don't have to marry that guy, but it sucks that it's because they think I'm ugly.
Yeah, how did this turn around on me?
Yeah, how am I the bad guy?
Imagine being kidnapped. Somebody's like, listen, I've just been so obsessed with you. And then after a few days, they're like, actually, you're gross. Get out of my dungeon.
I kind of assumed that you would have, like, a good personality, but, like, it's just bad all the way down, huh?
Thank you.
So he drops her off in a daisy and is like, don't call me. And she's like, okay.
Humbling.
Humbling.
Humbelina.
Humbelina. But she's now all on her own. No kidnappers in sight. And she's like, well, I guess I've got to take care of myself now. So she goes and she weaves herself a little hammock out of grass and she hangs it between two little sticks that are stuck in the ground and she finds a really big leaf and she puts it over top and she makes a little house for herself.
Cute.
A little lean-to. And she spends the whole summer just in her little hammock. She eats honey from flowers and she drinks the dew off of the blades of grass. And that's her delicious meal every morning.
Nice.
And she hangs out and she like sings to the birds and the bugs and everything, and they're all like, Thumbelina, you're beautiful. And she's like, I know.
I'd be afraid a bird would eat me.
Yeah,
that's birds fair. Would love to eat you if you were small.
Birds would love to eat you if you were small. You know, people always talk about how like your cat would eat you if you died.
No,
but nobody ever talks about how your bird would eat you if you were small.
In a heartbeat. They'd pop you in the mouth like a tic tac. And then they'd forget about you because they'd be hungry
instantly.
Again.
Yeah, birds and their brains are so small.
Birds are vicious.
So true.
In summation, birds are scary. June bugs, dumb as hell.
We're all learning facts about the birds and the bees today.
The birds and the beetles.
But she makes a little life for herself. She's able to survive on her own in the wild with her little grass hammock and her little sunbrella leaf. Mm-hmm. And she survives through the summer and into the fall, where she makes herself little clothes out of the fallen leaves, because all of her clothes, she's been wearing the same clothes for like a full season.
Yeah.
And they're getting really ratty. So she like makes herself a little leaf dress and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
And then winter comes, which is worse.
Yeah, not great.
Not good if you're so, so small. So small.
Yeah.
The smallest.
Even.
So skinny. No, nothing for warmth. she like tries to wrap herself up in leaves, but the leaves are cold and she doesn't generate enough body heat for it to be like helpful. Mm-hmm. So very quickly it becomes clear that she is going to freeze to death. And she kind of has the choice to, they don't go much into this in the story, but she makes the choice. She's like, I can either stay here and freeze to death or set off into the unknown and just pray that I find someplace warm.
Yeah.
They don't address the fact that she has to make that choice, but
a harrowing ordeal.
Yeah. But so she sets off in a direction to try and find any sense of warmth before she freezes to death. So she sets off into the unknown and she gets to this wheat field. Right. And it's the middle of winter. So all of the wheat has been harvested and it describes like the wheat stalks are just sticking up above the earth, just barely like stubble. And they haven't started to grow back up yet because it's wintertime. Mm-hmm. But even this like wheat stubble on the earth is like forests for her because she's so small. Did you forget? She's so small.
Wow.
So small. So she is just fighting her way through this wheat forest and she is running out of energy and time as it gets colder and colder.
Yeah.
And finally, she reaches this weird little door that's like set into the ground. And she's like, this is probably my only chance to get help. So she throws herself down in front of the door and like begs to be let in and to be given food. And she's like, I'm going to die out here. I'm literally going to die out here.
Yeah, things are bleak.
Yeah, things are not looking good for our heroes. Thumbelina. And a little field mouse comes to the door and opens it and is like, come inside. You're freezing. Come on in.
I'm remembering in the book, this is, I think, the part, not the book, sorry. I'm remembering in the
Don't
movie.
Don't spoiler it.
This is the part where I think the field mice give her soup and she eats it. But because it's like a Miyazaki level illustration, nothing has ever looked better Ooh. Than this particular soup that she's eating, and she's making the
ew.
Yeah, like the weird food noises, mm-hmm. but it's also like, wow, soup made by a mouse? Probably good.
More likely than you might think.
It's like acorn soup or something that they make her. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really good, actually.
Well, acorns are like poisonous to people.
Not me, though. I'm different.
Max is built different.
That's not true. They have, like, acorn flour that you can use for food.
Hmm.
Maybe it's one of those things like walnuts where they have, like, cyanide in them.
You have to do it, like, a specific way to...
Yeah.
You can't just...
Something like that.
Chew on acorns.
What I'm saying is, let me eat an acorn.
Hey, listen.
Let me eat an acorn.
Do you want to eat an acorn?
It's gonna hurt your teeth.
You'll shit yourself to death. I'm pretty sure that you'll shit yourself to death if you eat a bunch of acorns.
Okay. Well, the pros versus cons here. That'd be worth it. So this field mouse lets her into her home and gives her a big, warm, delicious dinner and wraps her up in blankets and is like, hey, it's okay. Like, you're warm. You're inside. You're safe now. You can stay in here for the entire winter if you want to. All you have to do is clean my house and tell me stories because I love stories. Mm-hmm. And then you can stay here for as long as you want because it's freezing out there and I'm not going to send you back out there. Mm-hmm. And then Melinda's like, great, fine. They don't talk about her telling any stories. That's just like a one-off line where they're like, you have to clean my house and tell me stories. And it doesn't ever depict her cleaning her house or telling stories. But also, she's like 4 days old. Yeah. Nothing has ever happened to her. She's never interacted with a person who hadn't kidnapped her.
Well, that she got a couple kidnappings. So I a couple guess. Of harrowing kidnapping stories.
A couple of like thrillers.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, she watched a butterfly starve to death.
Oh, God. She didn't watch it. She just knew that it was going to
happen.
She
was responsible for a butterfly dying a terrible death.
Yeah. So true.
Let's cancel Thumbelina.
Canceled. Too small.
Wow, you might get canceled for that.
Whoa. This is dangerous waters we're swimming in here.
Wow, can't say anything these days.
The field mouse welcomes her into the home and she stays with her for the entire winter. The field mouse tells her after a few days of being there, she's like, by the way, I have a visitor coming. He comes every week. And actually, I think it'd be really good for you to meet him because, he's kind of like really rich and he's got like a huge den.
Oh my God. I like leaned in like, yes.
No, he's got like a huge den and he always wears this like velvet like great coat, and it's like the finest coat in all the land. Like even the queen doesn't have a coat as fine as this. And she's like, I don't want to like be like, maybe you should try and marry him, but like you should definitely probably try and marry him. You would be set for life if you married him. And Thumbelina's like, I'm not really looking right now. And the field mouse is like, okay, but like you should try and marry him though. You don't even have to like him. He's so rich in furs and den.
Oh, he's a mouse.
Close. No, the field mouse is a mouse.
Oh, well, she has a visitor coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's not a mouse.
Okay.
And the field mouse is like, just don't talk about all the normal, like, boring stuff that you always talk about, where you're always like, oh, the sunshine and the flowers and the birds and the bugs and stuff. Like, just, he's not really into that. He kind of, like, doesn't really, like,
well, he sounds, outside. He sounds bad.
So just, like, I mean, just don't talk to him about that, okay? And then he'll be fine, you know, and you he'll probably be super into you because he's very lonely.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And Thumbelina's like, I don't know that I'm interested, actually. Thank you so much, though. And the field mouse is like, come on. He's, like, gorgeous for a mole. I mean,
he's a mole.
Yep. And moles are considered blind, which is why he doesn't like flowers or sunshine or anything. He just wants to live underground and be a mole.
Me too, man.
Hey. So this mole comes to visit, and Thumbelina, you know, serves them tea and everything, and he's like, wow, you're so beautiful. And she's like, oh my god, thank you. And every week he comes and visits the field mouse, and the field mouse is always like, get it, girl. Get it, girl. This is a wealthy mole.
Oh god.
And he's super into you. So every time he comes over, the field mouse, like, makes Thumbelina sing for him, and he's, like, obviously in love with her and doesn't say anything. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
The mole digs a long tunnel that goes from his den to the field mouse's den, so it's easier for him to come visit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, he wants to show them the tunnel, and he's, like, we're going to go down the tunnel, but, like, don't scream. Like, halfway down the tunnel, there's, like, something kind of upsetting. There's, what? Like, a dead bird, but it's fine, and don't worry about it.
Is it? How'd the bird get down there?
Great question.
Birds don't live underground.
They might. What about ground owls?
Oh, you're right. Some birds live underground.
Some birds live underground.
Is it just a dead ground owl underground?
No. No, it's a dead swallow.
Oh, no. So those definitely don't live underground.
No, they don't.
He's a serial killer.
He's like, so like halfway, we're going to have to like do a little two-step to get around the corpse of a bird.
Oh, my God.
But don't freak out. just be normal about it and whatever.
You're the weird one.
So he brings them down the tunnel, and sure enough, about halfway down the tunnel, they come across a swallow who has clearly frozen to death. He's got his little, like, wings tucked up against him, and he's not breathing, and his little eyes are closed. And the mole is like, look at this fucking idiot, and, like, kicks it. And they're like, what?
Oh, my God.
And he, like, kicks the bird, and he's like, what a stupid thing to be, a fucking bird. What are you gonna do, sing about it? Clearly not good enough to keep you alive. You're just going to starve every winter, idiot. I'm so glad that none of my children will be birds, because I can't imagine anything worse than being born a stupid, ugly little bird. Anyways, let's go, gals.
Oh, my God.
And the field mouse is like, he's so practical. It is true. It's a dumb thing to be born a bird. And wow, what a handsome, smart, practical man that he wouldn't want to be a bird. He'd rather be a mole.
Why isn't the field mouse marrying this mole?
That's a really great question. I've also wondered that many times myself.
Yeah.
And the field mouse is like, ew, gross, bird, and continues walking. And Thumbelina's behind them like, what the fuck? And she sort of goes behind them a little bit and, like, smooths out the swallow's feathers and kisses his head.
Aww.
And then continues on and, like, visits the mole's house. They visit. She goes back home and goes to bed, but she cannot sleep. She's still thinking about this bird.
Yeah.
As you do. And she just ends up staying up the whole night. She's like, well, if I'm not going to sleep, I'm going to do something. So she weaves together a bunch of straw into a blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And she sneaks down the tunnel to where the bird is, and she tucks this little blanket around the bird, and she takes some thistle down, which is the, like, little puffs of, it comes off of thistles.
Yeah.
That she found some thistle down in the field mouse's cupboards, and she took that and brings it to the bird and stuffs it in around the blanket to kind of make him more comfortable.
Yeah.
And she leans over and kisses his little closed eyes, and she's like, now you'll be warm, even if you're not, you know, you deserve to be warm, and I'm sorry that this happened to you. And
yeah.
Rest in peeps.
Rest in peeps.
And she wonders to herself, you know, she spent that whole summer outside on her own and she would like listen to the birds every morning. And she's like, I wonder if this is one of the birds that sang to me. And like, he deserved better. Mm-hmm. So she tucks him in and she like hugs this dead bird. Mm-hmm. And she hears a light thumping.
Oh, he's, yeah.
Because he's not dead.
He's just frozen.
Just frozen.
This is something with littler animals and with human babies is they survive frozen a lot longer than you would think.
I just feel like I have to say, don't freeze your baby. Don't freeze your baby. Don't throw them in the pool.
Just saying, you can if you find like a kitten outside in the snow and you're like, oh my God, it froze to death. Bring it in. You can slowly being the operative term, warm it up. And a lot of times
Don't put it in boiling water.
Yeah, don't put it in hot water. But like you could just slowly start to wrap it in blankets and like rub it with your hands and just like work some warmth back into it. And a lot of times they'll survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And babies too.
And babies. Don't put a baby in boiling water either. That's bad.
That is bad.
Not approved.
Oh, and there's the thing about microwaves. I'm kidding. Don't put a baby in a microwave.
Sword of the Story would like to officially offer our statement that you should not put babies in pools, microwaves, or freezers.
And don't put them in white after Labor Day. That's tacky.
That's tacky.
Tacky.
So she hears this like bird's heart beating and she realizes that he's still alive. He's just frozen. Mm-hmm. And she sort of tucks the blanket in tighter around him and she like rubs the blanket to try and get him a little bit warmer. She goes back to her room in the field mouse's house and she takes the mint leaf that she uses as a blanket and she brings it out and like wraps it around his head so that he'll be nice and warm. Mm-hmm. And he like starts to warm up. She can tell that he's like alive, but he still can't move.
Yeah.
So she goes back home and the next day she spends the day with the field mouse. And then when night comes, she sneaks out again to go see this bird. Mm-hmm. When she gets there, the bird is like recovered enough that he can open his eyes and kind of look at her.
Yeah.
He looks at her and he is able to very quietly, like hoarsely thank her for saving him. And he's like, thank you so much. Soon I will be warm enough that I can fly away. And like, you saved my life. Thank you. And she's like, well, it's still winter out. You can't fly away. You'll just freeze again.
Yeah.
And he explains that he was part of a migrating group of swallows, mm-hmm. but he was injured in a thorn bush. So one of his wings was hurt and he couldn't keep up with the migration and he fell behind and froze and just fell out of the sky to the ground. And that's how he ended up there.
Yeah, but he's buried underground.
Yeah.
Did the mole carry his body down?
Maybe.
That's so weird. How did he get in the tunnels? Mm. A mystery.
The mole is a murderer.
The mole, you know, sounds like a fucking freak.
Yeah, he's real weird.
Yeah.
So he got a thorn in the wing and fell behind his flock.
Yeah.
Of
birds.
Birds.
He's a seagull. I think a group of swallows should be called a storm.
Oh.
A storm of swallows. A spit of swallows. Is that what you were thinking? Max made a face and it jumped into my brain from hers. Max wants to call them a spit of swallows.
Leave me alone. My parents listen to this podcast.
Anyways. I literally just read your mind.
You did. So she gradually nurses this swallow back to health, mm-hmm. and she doesn't tell the field mouse or the mole because obviously they are psychopaths and they don't care about this bird, and they hate him for being a bird.
Yeah.
When it becomes spring, he is finally well enough and she opens a little hole in the ceiling of the tunnel.
But is he pretending to be dead still whenever the mole passes him?
Mm.
That's so weird.
Probably.
Okay.
She opens a little hole in the ceiling of the tunnel and the swallow is able to hop out. And he's like, okay, you saved my life and I can never thank you enough for that. And I'm going to go fly off and see if I can find my spin. Flock feels wrong.
No, it's a spit.
And he's like, you can come with me if you want. I can carry you. You're small enough that you can ride on my back and mm-hmm. we can fly away and go somewhere. And she thinks about it and she wants to mm-hmm. because, you know, even though it's spring now, she still kind of can't go outside. Like the field mouse lets her sit on the door stoop mm-hmm. to her little field mouse house. But she doesn't like her going very far away. Right. She kind of doesn't trust her to go very far. And like the field mouse and the mole live underground. So they never like go out.
Yeah.
So she only gets like a little bit of sunlight every day. And, you know, seeing this, like, sunlight through the tunnel and this bird, she, like, really, really wants to go with him. But she feels bad that she, you know, she would be just disappearing without the field mouse knowing. And the field mouse took care of her the entire winter. So she was like, I couldn't leave without saying goodbye. And I probably shouldn't leave anyways because she helped me. She saved my life. So I'm going to go back to the field mouse.
Okay. Sounds like a mistake, but okay.
It's a mistake. And the swallow's like, all right, well, I'll see you when I see you. And he flies away. The field mouse tells her that she's going to spend the summer
in an internship with Google.
She's going to spend the summer weaving her trousseau, which is like when a woman gets married, she's supposed to have all of her own linens. Kind of like that's the thing that she comes with to the house is she brings like sheets and towels and stuff.
BYOS, bring your own sheets.
Bring your own sheets. Mm-hmm. So she's like, you know, once your trousseau is finished and you have, it's kind of like a dowry, then, you know, you and the mole will be married and everything will be great. The mole proposed at some point over the winter and she didn't have a chance to say no. So she's like, we'll spend the summer and we'll weave your trousseau. And then at the end of the summer, you, like, once it starts to cool down, you and the mole will get married and it's going to be so amazing. I'm a matchmaker. Listen, and Thumbelina keeps being like, I don't want to marry him. And the field mouse keeps being like, okay, but that's stupid. You see how that's stupid, right? You would be set for life if you married him and you have nothing. So, and you, again, you don't have to like him. You just have to marry him and then you would have his whole big, beautiful den.
Ew.
All to yourself. So,
don't want it. It reeks like dead bird.
Yeah. So every time she tries to like tell the field mouse that she doesn't want to marry them all, the field mouse is like, oh, that's so funny because you're going to, because you're not an idiot, right? Right? Pretty big yike.
Yeah.
So she spends the whole summer, the two of them work on her trousseau. It's finally finished right at the end of summer, and the mole is like, thank God it's not so goddamn hot all the time. Like, we don't have to see all that sunlight anymore. It's finally cooling down, and it's nice enough that we could get married. A nice fall wedding. And so they set the date 4 weeks out. And as the wedding approaches, she finally just breaks down, and she begs the field mouse. She's like, I don't want to marry him. I do not want to marry him. I know that, like, you want a good life for me, but this is not what I want. He doesn't like the sun. He doesn't like the flowers. If I marry him, I'll never be able to go outside again. Like, I'll be underground for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And the field mouse is like, honey, you're welcome. You won't have to worry about sun damage. And finally, Thumbelina realizes that she's not going to convince the field mouse that they shouldn't be married.
Yeah.
The day before the wedding, she goes out to the dormouse's house doorstop.
Yeah.
The field mouse's house's
mouse stop.
Mouse stop.
She goes to the mouse stop and she hops on a mouse. She's leaving on the midnight mouse to Georgia.
She took a midnight mouse going anywhere.
The wheels on the mouse go round and round. You guys know.
Y'all know.
Mouse and mouse and mobiles.
But she sits out on the stoop of the field mouse's house and just cries, and she looks up at the sun and she's like, I guess I won't see this again ever again. And she cries to the sun and she's like, bye sun, bye flowers and being warm and being outside, bye bugs. And as she's weeping and saying goodbye to the sunlight and everything, the swallow flies overhead.
Yeah,
he just happened to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah, he's gonna stop by to see his old pal, small baby lady.
And he happens to hear her crying out to the sun about how she doesn't want to live in darkness forever. And he lands in front of her and he's like, hey, you know, offer still stands. If you want me to, like, it's starting to get cold and I'm going to be migrating south with my spit. If you wanted to, you could come with us. And Thumbelina, having realized that the field mouse, you know, kind of isn't really interested in what she wants and she's going to put her down a path that she doesn't want to be on, Thumbelina is finally like, yeah, I will come with you.
Yeah.
So she jumps up on the swallow's back and she ties her little sash to his, like, strongest feather. And he takes off and he starts to fly south. And when it gets too cold, she's able to, like, bury herself in his feathers. And as they fly, it gets warmer and warmer and sunnier. And she starts to see, like, butterflies again. And
and then the memories.
And then the memories. Oh, no. Yeah, that actually, now that you mentioned it, that would be
pretty traumatic.
Pretty traumatic. She's like tied herself to this bird with the same sash. She's seeing all the butterflies frolicking around, and oof.
She's got PTSD. Yuck. Butterfly traumatic stress disorder.
And the swallow flies south, and finally he lands in his winter home. They see this huge white marble palace, well-appointed, on a lake with all of these beautiful wildflowers growing around it. And he's like, that's my house. And she's like, wow, you live in a castle? And he's like, no, that's my house. And he points to a bird's nest on top of the castle. And she's like, oh, it's beautiful. And he lands and he's like, so you can pick any of these flowers that you want to live in, and that can be your home. And she's like, oh my God. And he's like, pick the nicest flower you want. You can have, girl, you can have whatever you want.
There's nobody as small as you. So it's not like you're going to have to fight.
You're not going to have, yeah, the housing market in flowers is not that competitive. I mean, you're going to probably have to fist fight a bee, but like.
You will have to fist fight a bee daily.
They are tenacious.
You will have to beat one of these butterflies.
They are tenacious bees. Tenacious bees.
Also, you'll have to beat a butterfly to death every day.
Oh, God.
I hope you're fine. I don't know if you have any experience with anything like that.
You ever seen the light leave a butterfly's eyes or anything?
She's like, I'm sorry.
So she looks down over all of the flowers and she's like, well, I want something that's close to town, but I want to be able to park. You know what I mean? And she looks down. She sees that one of the marble columns of this palace mm-hmm. has fallen and cracked on the earth. Mm-hmm. It's cracked into three pieces. And in between two of the pieces, there's this big, beautiful white flower. It kind of looks like a lotus growing out of the earth in the center of this column. And she's like, that's my house. That's the house that I want to live in.
Temporary housing.
What?
It's temporary housing. Flowers don't stay around all year.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that actually is something for some concern at some point. She should learn how to dig a hole.
She lives underground.
She becomes a bunker weirdo.
The end is nigh.
The toads are coming for me.
The butterflies, they know what I did. They'll never find me down here.
I love traumatized, paranoid Thumbelina who lives in a bunker. Ooh, that's really good for me. That might be my favorite thing that's come out of this episode so far.
You don't like leaving on a midnight mouse to Georgia? Why not?
So the swallow is like, you get, Thumbelina gets what Thumbelina wants.
Yeah.
And he flies her down to this white flower and drops her off, and she tumbles into this big, beautiful white flower. And knocks a guy over. He's in the flower too.
Oh, a boyfriend?
A boyfriend. This house comes with a boyfriend.
So the housing market is competitive.
So she rolls into the flower. She knocks over a tiny little guy. Mm-hmm. And he like sits up and adjusts his tiny little golden crown. And he's like, what the fuck? Why are you in my house?
Oh, he made himself a king. That's what I would do if I was suddenly small.
The story explains that he is the spirit of the flower and that every flower has spirits. And the swallow wouldn't know this because he doesn't hang out in flowers. He's not a bee. The story doesn't explain that. That's just me being hilarious.
Yeah, you are so funny.
Thank you. But every flower has a spirit, and he is the spirit of this flower. He's also the king of the flower spirits, which is why he has his little golden crown.
Oh, wow. So does that mean that's what this is her origin story? She's a little spirit flower spirit that was just adopted by a human, so she never knew her origins?
Probably.
That's
the implication.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's actually kind of blowing my mind. Cool.
It's pretty good. I like that. I mean, it does seem like the flower that was was planted with barley seeds. It seems like that witch had gotten a seed from wherever this is.
Yeah,
or whatever,
she probably stole somebody's child.
Ooh, yikes.
This could be a metaphor for like why you can't adopt indigenous children, because taking them out of their culture is like part of a cultural genocide. And also they grow up without knowing their history or their...
And then they have to marry a toad.
And they have to marry a toad. They're constantly getting kidnapped.
Harrowing.
Oh, my God.
So this tiny king a short king.
So this short king,
he gathers his composure back together and he looks at her and he sees the most beautiful tiny woman he's ever seen. And immediately he goes down on one knee and he takes off his crown.
No.
And he gives it to her and he's like, will you be my queen? And she's like, okay. And then they are set to be married.
What?
They have a big tiny wedding.
Thumbelina, no. This is the first person you've ever seen. Wait, girl, hold out.
Yeah, go on a date.
Meet other tiny men.
Yeah.
And there's women. There's
plenty of tiny men in the sea.
You need to meet some more tiny people and see how you feel.
But they are set to be wed. They have their huge bridal party. Their huge tiny bridal party.
She has a bridal shower.
And they all drown.
The swallow is there.
No, the swallow is there.
Okay, good.
So they have the huge like bridal party wedding thing and everything. And she gets a gift of little... What are they called? Little silver fly wings that she can strap onto her back so that she can fly from one flower to the other.
Cute.
Pretty cute. And the swallow hangs out and he sings at their wedding. And the story makes a note to say, the swallow sings at her wedding, even though he was really, like, kind of bummed out because he wanted to spend his life with Thumbelina as friends or whatever, or maybe whatever else. Maybe.
Oh, God.
Or whatever, but it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, gross.
And he's, like, super happy for her.
All men are gross.
So, you know. But, yeah, and she's like, so you're going to stay here for the rest of, you know, you're going to stay here. We're all going to live here in the flowers together. And this fellow's like, I gotta go, actually. This is, like, kind of awkward.
Oh, my God. He's like, actually, I don't want to be your friend anymore. I was only your friend because
yes,
nice guys really do finish last.
Wow.
He starts a podcast.
He's a swall cell.
God damn it.
So he flies back to his home in the north, mm-hmm. to Denmark, where he has a little nest on top of a windowsill that looks in the window of a man in an apartment, and that man is a storyteller.
It's Hans Christian Andersen.
And it's Hans Christian Andersen. Eee! And the swallow's outside, and he's cheeping. And Hans Christian Andersen hears it and says, uh-huh, and then what? And then he wrote down the story, and that's how we have it. The end.
The end. That's cool.
Pretty good.
Wow. That's a lot of Thumbelina lore I did not know.
Some pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I remember watching a movie of this when I was a child that genuinely traumatized me for life. The Toads. Horrifying.
Yes.
They are so fucking scary.
Yes.
I don't remember the Maybug. I do remember the Field Mouse and the Mole.
Okay. We might have seen, I think we've talked about this in like a very early episode, but we might have seen the same one because I also don't remember the Maybug, but I remember the Field Mouse and I remember the Toads.
Yeah. There's something so incredibly sinister about, that's like, the thing that's terrifying about that is that the Field Mouse is like, no, you can come in and I'll protect you. And then immediately like starts to kind of use her and trap her in a place where she's like, oh, you can't leave, obviously.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah, are you gonna leave?
And she seems so caring the entire time.
Yeah. And that was so goddamn terrifying to me as a kid because I was like, she doesn't want to marry the mole. But she's like,
yeah,
sort of being like emotionally abused and just staying around. And that is like one of the deepest horrors I have ever felt in my life is finding out about emotional abuse from Thumbelina.
Oh, God.
Where it's like, ooh, someone can be taking care of you and still not be taking care of you. Ugh. That's a really scary lesson for a child to learn.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so honestly, like, the movie version was harrowing. This is a terrifying story to tell to a child.
Yeah.
Where she's just kidnapped and then she never goes home to her mom. And also she murders a butterfly. And also, like, she just constantly is kidnapped and, like, bartered as a marriage piece.
Yeah.
Like, for her entire life.
Yeah.
And also, I remember as a kid being really upset. I was like, I really thought that she and the swallow were, like, supposed to be together. The movie really plays it like they're, like, romantic interests. Like, and then
he's gonna, I did halfway think that he was going to, like, turn into a handsome prince at the end.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and then, like, at the very end, she just, like, falls into a flower and there is a, like, nondescript blonde man with a crown and she's like, my husband! And the swallow's like, okay, I guess I'll just go fuck myself. That is a very, obviously, not great way to read this story. I don't want to be, like, pro-swallow. I also do want to say, though, I was reading about the story of Thumbelina. There's really nothing about it.
Yeah.
It's the story that it is. It was written by Hans Christian Andersen at a time.
Yeah.
There isn't like any like, oh, and it was happening at the same time.
He heard it
this.
From a bird.
Yeah, he heard it from a bird. Yeah. And that's the whole story. I did read one analysis, which ruined this story for me.
Okay. Max ruins stories.
Max ruins stories.
Beautiful.
And I just want to talk about Hans Christian Andersen for a second. We've done it before on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. And again, I would like to reiterate, Hans Christian Andersen, I'd never want to meet him ever. If I die, I don't want to have a conversation with Hans Christian Andersen. He seems exhausting.
He does seem exhausting. Hans Christian Andersen was noted by his contemporaries for being prone to fits of emotion.
Yes. He threw a lot of temper
tantrums. He was also known for being an obsessive romantic.
He was a little bit of a creep.
And he was constantly, like, ruining his life and trying to, like, he was constantly finding someone who he was like, this is the love of my life.
Yeah.
And then being super shitty to everyone that he knew and being like, we're going to go away together. And then the person that he was, like, in love with would be like, I have never talked to you. What are you talking about? And he's like, we're in love. And they're like, no, we're not. And he's like, well, I guess I'll just go kill myself.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a lot of, like, him finding the love of his life and going really hard and, like, being really shitty about it.
Which that alone, I mean, that comes from places, right?
Of, yeah.
Like getting obsessive or like being very clingy or romanticizing things that you're not. And
yes.
He was a gay man at a time when you could not be. So there's a lot you can forgive about some of his behavior. Like specifically.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, like, I'm thinking more on, who was it? Was it Charles Dickens? Said that he came to his house and then was constantly trying to say, like, well, your son should probably shave me. It's a Danish custom, which is a funny story to say out loud. But I'm also like, how old are the sons? And no, I'm not going to let my children shave you every morning. And, like, I'm sorry. Huge creep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot to admire about Hans Christian Andersen, but I've never gotten over that story.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also, I mean, we don't have anything specifically saying that he was gay, but we have a lot of references suggesting that he was queer.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Like, genderqueer, probably bi or pan, had a lot of very intense love affairs with men and women. That is recorded. So, with that in mind, because Hans Christian Andersen stories always have a character that is Hans Christian Andersen.
Ooh, okay.
Which character do you think is Hans Christian Andersen in the story?
And he's usually self-aware. It's usually like an annoying character.
It's either like a morally righteous character or like a character that everyone just hates for no reason.
Well, he's probably either the Mayfly or the Swallow.
He's the Swallow.
Yeah.
he's the Swallow. In my opinion.
Yes.
And thinking of it that way recolors this story, because this is a story about a swallow who, you know, like, she saves him, he saves her, mm-hmm. They fly away together, and then she finds the love of her life, and he's like, wow, I guess I'll just go fuck myself.
Yeah.
And also it colors the rest of the story, where the details of her previous relationships really feel like someone gossiping about a specific person.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, like, she was supposed to be married young into this really gross family, but then she was able to get away, mm-hmm. and then she had, like, an affair with this, like, very, like, magical boy, the, like, white butterfly, and then, like, someone, like, stole her away or whatever, and then he was mean to her and, like, kicked her out, and, mm-hmm. like, it really feels like someone gossiping about someone's entire relationship history,
yeah.
and at the end being like, yeah, now she's happily married if you, you know, believe in that kind of stuff, and I'm fine.
Well, it could also be because Hans Christian Andersen does have, there are some, like, very famous letters from Hans Christian Andersen to his best friend who he was in love with, and his best friend married a woman. Mm-hmm. Isn't that Hans Christian Andersen? I also might be thinking of Lewis and Clark, which also happened with them. But, guys, Lewis and Clark, terrible people, but if you read those love letters, it's heartbreaking. Fucking crushes your soul. But, so he has those things of, like, wow, like, I've been in love with you. It's the idea of, like, his friend was like, I've never heard this before. We've never talked about this before. I don't have those feelings for you. I love you as a friend. Basically, he's mm-hmm. almost said that, like, word for word. He's like, you mean a lot to me as a friend, but I don't harbor those romantic feelings for you. And Hans Christian Andersen was heartbroken by it. It's what's thought to have inspired The Little Mermaid, you mm-hmm. know? And so the idea that she, at the end, has this long, like, intense relationship with the swallow, and they literally rely on each other to survive, and then at the end she finds somebody of her own species and she marries them right away,
mm-hmm.
feels like the betrayal of,
yes.
like, well, it feels like that love letter to his friend, you know, of like, well, yeah, this is out of the quote-unquote out of the norm of society, but, like, it's a little bit of a betrayal that you went and married a woman.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like another Little Mermaid story, you know?
Definitely. And it also, again, like, as soon as I read the analysis being like, so he's obviously the Swallow, I was like, oh, fuck, he is obviously the Swallow. Yeah. As soon as I read that, though, I was like, all of the little details in this story become so specifically referential, where I'm like, oh, and he introduced them, and they got married. Yeah. And, like, the weird betrayal of being like, yeah, I'm really happy for you, you're my friend. Ooh. Anyways, this is a story about being a bird who is friend-zoned.
Yeah, 100%, that's what this is.
This is... to be clear, I am not espousing the idea that, like, she should have been with him or anything like that. The story very clearly presents it that way, though. Like, there is a line in the text of the story that's like, yeah, and the Swallow was, like, sad or whatever, because obviously, like, they were supposed to be together, but, like, whatever. It was, like, a nice wedding, I guess. It's
A huge bummer.
It's big style.
But it's also very complicated in a very human way, which I think is another reason why Hans Christian Andersen has, like, his work has survived up till now, you know? Is as much as I'm like, good Lord, everything I read about him makes me think that, like, nope, I would not have been your friend, sir. You sound exhausting. But also, I'm like, there's a reason why your stories are lasting, because that's a very human, universal trope, you know?
Yeah.
And it feels honest, too. There's, like, something very, this reason why there's so many rom-coms about people having to watch the love of their life get married to somebody else, you know? Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of a pain there. It's weird that that's not the main story, that it's about Thumbelina. But
yeah,
two classes of thought, you know, for this very nuanced story.
I'm thinking about two episodes from now telling some of the Tom Thumb stories.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be fun.
But those are American stories, right?
No, those are... Those are, like, English and French stories.
Why am I thinking they're American stories? Do we have an American version of Tom Thumb?
Are you thinking Paul Bunyan?
That's the opposite of Tom Thumb. Imagine if they were buddy cops.
Oh, good. But I'm going to tell some Tom Thumb stories at some point in the future. The other thing that's really fucked up about this story is that the Tom Thumb stories are all about him, like, being a tiny little swashbuckler and, like, solving problems and everything. And her story is all about her getting kidnapped and, like, almost married off, like, seven times.
No, her whole story is hinged on the fact that the most important thing happening to her is that men want to marry her.
Yeah.
And also it hinges on the fact that, like, even all of these different species care about marriage so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
It's a huge bummer. Just wanted to mention that, but also the Tom Thumb stories are pretty fun.
Yeah.
And there was apparently an animated movie where Tom Thumb and Thumbelina got married.
Yeah, I think I remember this.
Yeah, so.
How fun.
Yeah. Anyways, horrifying story of Thumbelina.
Good job, Max.
Thanks, buddy.
I am obsessed with that, and I learned a lot today.
Thank you. Also, I was looking up illustrations of Thumbelina, and I assumed that there were going to be a lot of really cool ones, and there kind of aren't, and there should be.
Isn't that the cover of your Hans Christian Andersen book? Isn't that Thumbelina?
I think so.
It's like a little block print.
Yeah.
It's cute.
But a lot of them are just a picture of, like, a weird featureless baby inside of a flower.
Featureless baby.
Also, sorry, really quickly, the idea that she's, like, again, like, the born sexy yesterday, is she lives in a cradle, but she's, like, a woman.
Yeah.
Is bad.
There's an infantilization of of the main character who everybody wants to have sex with.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They're like, oh, she's like a little baby. She can't take care of herself, but in a hot way.
But in a hot way. Don't you want to marry her?
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, that's it.
Cool.
Okay. Tell me a story.
Well, no, we're going to take a little break
first. No, tell me a story.
Don't be
now,
afraid.
Now, immediately. Now!
Max, you need a break. Okay, we'll be right back, guys. Bye! Okay, Max.
Okay, JD.
Max, okay. Today, I'm going to be sharing a story that I was given through our email, sortofthestory@gmail.com, by Jenna Rose, who we referenced in the introduction. Jenna says, I was inspired by your podcast to keep an eye out for story and folklore books. I was antiquing with my siblings, and I found a copy of World Tales collected by Idris Shah, who is a very famous writer and philosopher and... honestly, was promoting a philosophy that sounds very cool, but I couldn't understand it. So I'm not going to talk about it, and I'm sorry. Go Google Idris Shah, and if you're smarter than I am, which you probably are, explain it to me. Okay. The book was published in 1979, so I was pleasantly surprised to see that it does a fairly good job of detailing the background and sources of the story within, though it is still slightly problematic for modern times. 1979, that's fair.
Yeah.
That happens. Idris Shah is from India. And so there's also a lot of, like, it's very specifically a lot of, like, Persian and Indian based stories in the collection. It's pretty cool. They sent me a link to one of their stories that they thought that we would enjoy, and I read it and I did enjoy it. So,
ooh.
So I'm about to tell the story that they recommended. It's called Tales of a Parrot.
I like it.
Okay, so this is Tales of a Parrot from World Tales collected by Idris Shah. This is not about a parrot. This is tales told by a parrot. I'll tell you the conceit of it later.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole time I'm telling the story, pretend I'm a big parrot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm usually pretending that you're a big parrot.
I know. Try something new for a change.
Try something new for a change.
Ooh. By the way, this is three stories. I'm about to tell you three separate short stories. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Okay.
Number one. Quote, once upon a time, there lived a king who had an only daughter who was the sun, moon, and stars to him. End quote. That's the first line. He spoiled her rotten, and he never said no to her when she wanted anything, and she was just living like a beautiful, idyllic little princess life. One day, the king and the princess decided to go driving out on the countryside. It was spring, and there were tons of beautiful flowers in the valleys, and he was like, I just really want to spend time with my daughter, because I just love her so much, and she would really like to see the flowers. So they stayed out a lot longer than they would usually stay out, and they went farther than they would usually go. At one point, they stopped the royal coach so the little princess could get out and pick a bunch of flowers and make bouquets, and then they drove back home. When they got back inside the palace, though, the princess realized that she had lost something. It was her favorite doll, which was beautiful and life-sized, so it was like the same size as her, and it looked a lot like her. And she realized, like, oh my god, I must have left her in the valley when we stopped to pick flowers. She must still be there. So because she had no brothers and sisters, this doll was like her favorite thing that she had in the entire world. Every day, her little like maids would dress the doll up in the same clothes that she was wearing. So it had her exact wardrobe. And also it had almost as many jewels as she did. And she would like match her jewelry to her doll and like match her hairstyles like that. So it was like her little Megan.
As an adult, I'm looking at this and thinking, wow, that's a little bit creepy. I know, though, that as a kid, I would have been fucking feral for that.
I had
absolutely insane.
I had a little doll that was about the same size as me and did look a lot like me. Like, we had the same haircut and mm-hmm. it was dressed in like little overalls. And I remember one time I was carrying it on a plane and I was like 5 carrying this thing and the flight attendant almost fucking shit a brick. She was like, oh my God, I thought that was, whoo. I thought you were just carrying a toddler, and I was carrying it like a doll. It's like held it around the waist, and its like head was like dragging along the floor. Anyway, I had that doll. Okay. She desperately wanted this doll back. But for some reason, she didn't want to tell her father she had lost it. Instead, she decided she was going to slip out by herself and look for the doll. So she waited for him to leave to change his robes, and the second nobody was watching her, she escaped through a secret exit. She'd never been outside by herself before, and so she immediately got super lost, and she couldn't find her way home. She wandered and wandered until night fell, and she was scared, and she was hungry, and she was sad, and, you know, just not having a good time. But luckily, around this time, she stumbled upon a fine palace. She knocked on the door, and she shouted, "Who is the owner of this magnificent building?" And they could just tell that she was a princess, so the doors were opened, and the captain of the guard told her that this was the palace of the great and glorious King of Spain.
Oh, the King of Spain!
Yeah.
I love that in a lot of fairy tales, they'll be like, it's the King of Spain, to be like, yeah. Ooh, a king that's exotic. Yeah, it's always the King of Spain.
Yeah, it's always the King of Spain. So she told the captain that she was a lost princess, and she was immediately taken in and allowed in a guest chamber, and several maids helped her change into royal sleeping robes, and they tucked her in, and she fell fast asleep in a comfortable bed. And the story was like, she felt perfectly safe because she was in a castle, and she was used to that. The next morning, they dressed her, and they took her before the King of Spain, who was very impressed by her appearance and her manners. He told her that he didn't have any children anymore, and he asked her if she would like to be his daughter and stay with him forever. So he had had a daughter.
Why not?
His wife had died, and he had had a daughter that he loved very much, but one day she had gotten lost and never came back.
Oh, no.
I know. So, like, a lot like what happened to this little girl and her father.
What if they switched places?
A parent trap, and they're trying to get their two dads together.
Oh, yes.
I want to watch a gay parent trap so bad. So the little girl thought about it, not at all, before saying, sure, I'll stay with you forever and be your daughter. And that's what she did.
But
no, she doesn't think about it at all. He's like, do you want to stay here forever and be my daughter? And she's like, uh-huh. That's it. That's all that happens.
Does she remember the doll?
But of course, not everyone was happy with this arrangement. The doll was pissed.
Just laying in a field like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
I'm getting dirty. So there were 12 royal maidens who were related to the king of Spain by marriage, okay? And they were all like, I'm sorry, you just picked up a fucking street urchin and made her your daughter while we're all right here? We've been kissing your ass for years. Why not me? And so they were all just really, really, really incensed by this. So they decided to sabotage her.
Oh.
One day, they went to her and asked her to come with them on their next outing. They were like, oh, there's so many things to see outside of the confines of this court. You're going to love it, and we can't wait to show you. But the princess was like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. She said, quote, I am not sure that I can go anywhere without the permission of dear royal papa. He never likes me to leave his side.
This is, it's that meme that I sent out where it's like, me, I'll never be the kind of evil overlord that tosses their minions when they're being annoying. And then like 5 years later, one of my minions, hee-hoo! Me, it's like, wow, I would never punt a child. Mm. And then it's like, my dear papa wouldn't like it. And it's like,
I might punt a child outside.
Oh no.
Okay, but the royal maidens told her that all she would have to do to get out of, you know, being next to his side is to say, by the soul of your daughter, you must let me go with the royal maidens. They're like, go tell him that. He'll definitely let you come out with us. Tee-hee-hee. And so she was like, okay, I'll try it. But the second she said those words to him, he had this, like, smile on his face, like, I love my adopted daughter. And then the smile, like, left his face, and he got really angry. And he shouted, ah, wretched girl, how dare you speak to me like that? To the trap door with you! And so she was pushed through a large trap door.
Pull the lever.
Pull the lever, crunk! And soon she was falling down, 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 quote, through time and space into complete and terrible darkness.
The space is normal, but the time...
Okay, I also... They're going to forget about that fact in a hot minute. So.
Oh, okay.
Soon she stopped falling. She felt the wood of a door in front of her. She's, like, in complete darkness, but she feels, like, a door where she is. And so she turned the knob, and it opened. And she felt tinder and matches in her hand. Doesn't explain where she got them. Mm. So she lit a lamp. Doesn't explain where the lamp came from. So, you know what? She's got some stuff. So she didn't fall into, like, nothing. She's, like, in a basement area, basically. That's where that went. In front of her, she saw another door, which was half open. So she approached it, and she saw in the lamplight in this room that she's in now, a beautiful young girl, quote, as fair as the moon on her 14th night. It's like a full moon. She got a moon face. This poor girl had her hands tied, and there was a silver padlock on her mouth, so she could not speak.
Ooh.
Yes. So the princess looked at her questioningly, like, And the girl pointed her head towards the pillow of the bed in the room, like, And then the princess looked under the pillow. Oh. And there was a silver key under it.
Ting!
So the princess unlocked the girl's lips, and... That was an upsetting sound. The princess unlocked her lips, and the girl told her that she was the king's daughter that had gone missing, and that she had been stolen by a magician. She didn't know how long she had been here, but get ready to be real creeped out. Every night at midnight, the magician would visit her and would bring two slaves. We're about to get problematic. And he would bring two slaves carrying bowls of food and fruit to feed her.
Hmm.
And he would just like... feed her. Yeah, he's a fucking weirdo. So the princess was like, is there any way to free you? Or what's the deal? And the girl was like, I would have to ask the magician. And she's like, do you mind hiding under the bed and listening to our conversation? And maybe just pointing out if he says anything interesting that I missed? And the girl, she's like, I'm going to try to get information out of him. And the princess was like, yeah, okay. I'll fucking hide under a bed. I don't care. So she hid under the bed. When midnight came, the door flew open, and a strange man with, quote, a long dark robe, white beard, and fierce, piercingly blue eyes appeared. Here's the problematic part. Attended by two coal-black slaves of savage aspect.
Oof.
So this is what Gemma Rose was saying when she was like, there are parts that were problematic even for the time and that don't mm-hmm. hold up. This is part of it, right? But
yeah.
Yeah. He unlocked her lips and with, quote, every sign of affection, fed her with his own hands from the bowls. Mm. Yeah, I hate this. This guy is a fucking creep. As he fed her, he gave her all sorts of compliments and just, like, fawned over her. So she still is tied up, but he's just unlocked her mouth and is, like, hand-feeding her fruit. And so at this point, she was like, thank you for the compliments. That's so nice. Grapefruit. Real quick, for argument's sake. She says, quote, if I were to escape from here, how would it be done? Not for any particular reason. I just think curious. It'd be fun to chat a little. And he smiled and was like, well, there's no chance you could ever do it. So there's no harm in me telling you. And he laughed and told her that she'd have to put gunpowder. You're going to think this is so funny. All around the castle in a circle. And then when he came at midnight, she'd have to light it. And he laughed and she laughed. Like, what? You can never do that. And then he said, but eat these delicacies. You would not get food like this in the world except through my magical agency. And she's like, yep, no, more strawberries. Thanks. Crazy.
Thank you know what I'm really hungry for, though?
Strawberries.
Gunpowder.
What? So the girl laughed some more and ate some more weird finger fruit. And when she was done, the magician had one of the slaves wash her mouth with rose water. And he wiped it himself with a napkin. And then he locked her mouth back up with the padlock and then left for the night.
Mm.
Yeah. A fucking weirdo. Also, this feels like terrible innuendo and I hate it.
Yeah.
After a while, after he left, the princess came out from under the bed and she was like, I'm going to go try to get back up and tell my adopted father.
Your dad.
Your daddy.
Our dad,
our
if you will.
Our royal papa. I'm going to tell him what's going on and get his help. And she says, either you're going to be rescued or we're going to blow up together. That's like a
damn.
Quote. Yeah.
That's hard as fuck.
It really is. So she crept out of the room. She climbed up through the trap door, which is why I'm thinking she exaggerated falling through time and space. And she shouted for the king of Spain.
I mean, technically, like, space, like, 5 feet, time, a few seconds.
Yeah. The king of Spain had missed her after he had tossed her through the trap door. He was like, I may have overreacted. And so when she started calling, he immediately came to her and helped her out. And she was like, I have to tell you something. Like, don't say anything. I have to get this out. And she tells him the whole story. And he's like, okay, I'm going to wake up the captain of the guard. And he's going to, like, make that ring of gunpowder around the castle. As soon as he can wake up all the men, we're going to get started on that. And so he also said, I'm going to light that ring myself. That's what I'm doing at the stroke of midnight. I'm going to be Papa. One holding the torch.
Good.
And he's like, don't worry Good. Anymore. You're safe. She's going to be safe. Go back to your room and hide. And she's like, no, I can't hide. She's like, I promised that I'd rescue her or we'd blow up together. So bye. And she crawled back through the trap door and went down. That night, she comforted the girl with the silver padlock on her lips. And she was like, here's the plan. And your dad knows everything. And you're going to be okay. And she said all these encouraging words to help pass the hours. The king's sappers, I don't know what that is, began digging as soon as they could. And they worked away to prepare the mine, which I'm guessing you can't just...
A mine.
a whole mine. I guess you can't just put the gunpowder in the open. I don't know. Also, what? This feels like a trap to trick them into blowing up their castle.
Yeah.
Right?
It kind of feels like they're going to blow up the ring around the castle, and then the castle is going to drop into the earth into, like, a secret second zone.
Yeah, no.
Level two.
My brain is definitely in Looney Tunes mode.
Yeah.
The day passed very slowly for the two girls underneath the castle. They make the point to be like, it's like 24 hours for them.
Oh, yeah.
And she's still just tied up. She's been tied up this entire time. She hasn't moved from this chair.
She should try jumping through the trap door.
And yeah, the girl
passing
really
through
should
time
just
and space.
Untie her. But they don't do that. By the time it was nearly midnight, though, the gunpowder was ready in a large circle around the castle. When the clock struck 12, the princess hid under the bed, and the girl with the padlock on her lips looked as she always did, patiently waiting for the magician to appear. And then the gunpowder was lit. And quote, the magician was blown into the sky in 1,000 pieces. The two girls were severely shocked for a few seconds, but soon began to laugh with joy and relief, though they had singed eyebrows, torn clothes, and blackened faces. End quote. They had also been blown up.
Yeah, they all got blown up.
Yeah, and they're like, ha, ha, ha!
Directed by Justin Lin.
Oh, my God. So they climbed out of the tunnel together, and the King of Spain hugged his lost daughter. And to the brave princess who had rescued her, he promised she could have his crown after he died. And I was like, wait, that's going to drive a wedge between the two girls.
Yeah, that's concerning.
But the little princess told him that she was the king's daughter herself, and so she already had a crown waiting for her. She's like, you don't need to give me a crown. I'm going to get one anyway.
But do you want to come meet my dad?
Own daughter. Then they had a feast that lasted many days and nights to celebrate her bravery and the return of the lost princess. The story spread all over the earth, and everyone in every country knew about the brave and beautiful princess who had saved another king's daughter from certain death and dishonor.
With pyrotechnics.
And the last line of this story is, quote, "And all the chief actors in this tale, except, of course, the magician, enjoyed life and happiness in all the days of their sojourn into the world."
What about the doll?
End quote.
What about the doll?
Here's the second story.
What about the doll?
Doesn't come up in this one, sorry.
What about the doll?
Yeah, the doll is gone. Trash. Second story. Here's the first line. Quote, "Once there was a king who had an only daughter who was as beautiful as any young girl ever born to humankind." End quote. On her 18th birthday, news came that the king of the Turks wanted to marry her, and the daughter refused, saying, quote, "What do I want with a Turk for a husband?" So,
whoa.
So she racist.
You fucking turkey.
So soon after this, though, she suddenly got really, really sick out of nowhere for no reason. Hmm. She had never had a single health issue in her life.
Must be nice.
I wrote must be nice.
Must be pretty fucking nice.
Wow, must be nice. But suddenly her eyes were rolling in her head, her body was shivering, and her limbs were twisted under her, and nobody could, like, wake her up or make her better. Hmm. The king, her father, sent for dogs. Sounds like dog cologne.
That's good.
The king sent for dogs.
Oh, the toilette.
Poor puppy.
What is it? Pierrot? No.
For Poirot?
No, I'm trying to think what the word for dog is. I can't remember.
The king sent for doctors from far and wide, but no one could help her or tell him what was wrong with her. It was this medical mystery, and she was dying. So the king sent for all the wise men in his capital city, and he told them to tell him what to do. He's like, I'll do anything. And in unison, they said...
One, two, three...
You have to kill your safe. You have to kill your safe. Wow.
You have to kill your sad wife.
Kill your sad wife.
Just kill your sad wife already.
Anyway, that's what they said.
Oh my god, what did they actually say?
And then they strand and he strangled her to death.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's fine. But they also said, quote, "Your majesty, find the princess of whom we had just heard, who caused the rescue of the daughter of the king of Spain from the dreaded magician who hid her away and locked her lips. Find her and she will find a way." End quote.
Also, get some gunpowder ready.
I was so excited when the second story was was a continuation of the first story. I was like, yeah. Whoa, she coming back.
Main character.
Yeah. And she's like, we have to blow up your castle.
He's like, no, my daughter is sick. And she's like, no, we have to blow up the castle.
Let's blow up your castle.
Let me see the flames.
I long for the flames. I long for the mine. So the king ordered ships to set out at once to find the girl. He stated that if the king of Spain would not let her come willingly, then he'd declare war on Spain. So I guess she never went home.
Oh.
Yeah. The king of Spain read his letter and decided he'd rather go to war than let this man take his precious adopted daughter who he loved so much. The little princess came out from behind an ivory screen, which she just hangs out behind, and she said, "What is it, royal papa?" And he told her... And he told her about this ridiculous request, and he's like, I'll never let you do it, and, like, don't worry, you don't have to go. And she was like, what are you so afraid of? It's not like I'm gonna leave and never come back, you know? It's not like she has a history of disappearing out of nowhere and then ending up in another king's castle as his daughter. She would not do that. And so she left. When she arrived at the other castle, the foreign king told her that if she could cure his daughter, he would give her his crown.
She's just got crowns on, crowns on, crowns.
Seriously. And also, don't offer that up right away. Most people will accept money. Mm-hmm. Or like an honestly, autograph.
She probably needs money more than she needs another crown.
100%. She waved him off, telling him that she was a king's daughter and already had a crown. So she's like,
So you can keep it.
Keep it. Yours is ugly. But she said that she'd take a look at his daughter anyway. After seeing the 18-year-old princess lying in the bed, wasting away, she decided to take bold action. She told the king, quote, make a circle of gunpowder around your castle. I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. I was so ready for her to be like, make a circle of gunpowder around your daughter and then blow up all of the sickness out of her and then she'll be fine. She knows one solution.
No.
Just blow her up. She'll be fine.
She actually told him to make some soup and cook some chickens and cut up some cheese and fruit and bring them all to her in the other princess's room and then lock the door for 3 days.
We need a snack and we need girl time.
And then she'll be all better. She said, lock us up for 3 days. No matter what he heard, even if she herself was crying out for him to open the doors, he must not do it. And she said, quote, within 3 days, I will deliver your daughter to you. Alive or dead.
What?
Yeah.
Alive would be preferable, I would imagine.
I would appreciate it if you could try to make it alive. Please don't come out here with her dead.
What if he closed the door and she just murdered her and then hung out and ate snacks for 3 days and was like, oh no, the process.
You don't understand. I had to cut her head off.
What? Just chewing on Gouda.
After she was locked inside the room, the sun began to go down outside the windows, and she decided to light a candle because she didn't like the darkness because she has recently been thrown into a tunnel.
Sure.
So as she was searching around, she realized they had forgotten to give her any like matches or tinder. And so she poked around in the cupboards looking for tinder, her unlit candle in her hand. And she discovered that one of the cupboards in the room led to another smaller room. And so she kind of like climbed into that room. There's a little window in that room. And she saw outside of the window that there was a light in the distance. And she fucking hated the dark. So she was like, I'm going to go find that light. And so she climbed out of the window with a silk ladder, which was just there.
Yeah.
To find the light source. The light was coming from a huge black cauldron placed on a fire. Stirring the pot with a stick was a tall Turkish man. She greeted him and said, what are you doing, O noble Turk? And he replied, my king wanted the daughter of this king, but she did not want him, so he is having this done as a bewitchment.
A bewitchment.
And she was like, mm-hmm. You look so tired. You've been doing this for a while, huh? And he's like, well, yeah, I've been doing it for a while. And she goes, and you just constantly have to stir that cauldron. I mean, your arms look really strong. Like, that stirring is really, like, that's a good workout. And he's like, it's a little, I'm getting kind of strong. And she's like, wow. And you're so brave to do this. Like, so brave and also so dedicated. My heart is hurting for you that you haven't had a break or anything. Like, you must be so sleepy.
I'm sleepy just thinking about it.
I just can't. And he's like, I'm a little bit sleepy. And he's like, I am a little tired and I am brave and strong. And she's like, you poor thing. I'll tell you what. Why don't you take a quick nap and I'll stir the pot for you for a little bit so you can get some shut eye? Yeah? And he's like, okay, I could take a little nap. And she takes the stick from him and she starts to stir and she's like, am I doing it right? Do you want to show me how to do it? And he's like, okay. he holds her from behind and like stirs the stick with her. And she's like, wow, those big strong arms. Like, you know, when you wake up from your nap, maybe we can like do something, you know, or I don't know. And he's like, okay, maybe after I wake up from my nap. And she's like, go ahead and sleep, you strong boy. Let's see it. And so he starts to like, he lays down and he's like, this is pretty nice, pretty girl and strong. And starts to close his eye. And she whispered, take a sleep now, I'll stir. And then he fell asleep. And here's a quote. When he was asleep, she bent down and with her amazing strength, threw him into the boiling cauldron.
What?
I don't know why she's so strong. It mentions specifically that he's a tall man. How did she do that?
God, so
when
damn.
He was fully dead, she lit her candle with the flame beneath the cauldron and then walked back up and climbed the silk ladder. She got her light now.
What the fuck?
She sat by the princess's sick bed and saw that she already looked better, and so she sat with her for 3 days and three nights, feeding her the delicacies which the king had provided. And on the third day, the foreign princess got up perfectly well, and the two girls hugged each other and called for the king to open the door. When he did, seeing his daughter was alive and well, he hugged and kissed both of them with great joy. This little princess is a badass. Like, everything she does, I'm like, Jesus Christ. He said, "Ah, my daughter," to the little princess who performed the miracle and who's on a world tour saving princesses and collecting daddies. He said, "I owe you my kingdom and my daughter's life. What in the world can I possibly give you to repay you?" And she told him that her gifts aren't worth anything. What? She works, quote, "by the power vested in me by providence." She's like, "I just go where I'm needed. Don't worry.
God gave me these muscles, and so I must fight."
God gave me these muscles and this ass that don't quit, and this crippling fear of darkness. The king begged her to stay with them in this country, where she'd be as dear to him as his own daughter. But the princess was like, "Okay, but you threatened the king of Spain with war if I didn't come, and he threatened you with war if I didn't come back. So, like, I gotta get home. Now." "Thank you." So the king agreed, thanking her again, and he threw a huge feast in her honor. So she's getting repaid in feasts. Mm-hmm. And the last line of...
all that protein is how she got so buff.
She's getting so buff from all the protein. So the last line is, quote, "loaded with costly presents for herself and her father, she soon departed and returned to the king of Spain's palace," end quote. So far I am upset that she hasn't gone home. She keeps referencing the fact that she has a father, but... she just lives with the king of Spain and never told her dad where she was.
Yeah. And also the doll. Just really thinking about that doll.
What about the doll? So the third and final story starts with the quote.
"I just remembered that you're a parrot."
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm a parrot. Squawk, squawk. Quote. "Once upon a time, there lived a king and queen who had a handsome son whose only diversion in life was to go hunting." That's the opening. "He hunted almost every day, attended by many huntsmen. One day, when he was in a far valley, he happened upon something wonderful. It was a beautiful doll lying on the ground."
Oh my God. It's all coming together.
"The doll was dressed like a real princess. She had jewels in her ears and around her neck, and she was just wearing a beautiful dress. And he searched everywhere for the owner of this doll." Like, he walked around like, "Is there like a little girl around here, or maybe an older girl? I don't know. This doll is this." But he didn't find her. So he put the doll up on his horse as if it were a lady and told everyone that it was time to go home. And when he got home, he brought the doll into his room and placed her on his mantle. And then he stared and stared at her, thinking, if the doll was this beautiful, how beautiful must her mistress be? Surely she was made in that girl's likeness. And then I wrote, this is creepy unless the prince is also a child, because that's a doll.
Yeah.
The king and queen didn't see their son for several days after this.
Oh, he fucks the doll.
Oh, no.
Oh, he fucks the doll.
And the court physician was like, yeah, he's been in his private chambers.
With the door locked.
Doing something. Every time we knock, we hear like a shuffling, him saying, don't come in. The king was concerned and went to see him. And quote, "he found the prince looking at the doll on the mantelpiece, muttering feverishly, if this is the doll, how beautiful must the mistress be? If this is the doll, how beautiful must the mistress be?" And he's just like muttering that over and over again, oh, staring at this doll. He is gaunt and sick. He has not moved from this spot, and he has not eaten or drink water in days.
Jesus.
The king was terrified, and he's like, did you become an idol worshiper in the last few days? Like, what's going on? And the prince turned his dull eyes on his father and said, if this is the doll, just think how beautiful the mistress of such a doll must be. Just think of the mistress if this is only the doll. And that's all he would say.
Oof. I'm starting to think the doll might be evil.
The doll seems evil for sure. The king realized that his son was obviously very sick, and so horrified, he left and summoned all of his courtiers. He told them that the court physician hadn't found anything physically wrong with him, but the prince had gone completely mad, and now he could never take his place as a ruler when he was gone. So his priorities are not great. He asked them what could be done, and one aged courtier stepped forward and bowed and then said, quote, your majesty, people are talking about a miraculous princess who goes from kingdom to kingdom, curing people. She is said to have found the king of Spain's lost daughter and to have cured another princess only recently. Send for her, and if she will not come, declare war upon her father.
Men really have two modes.
They are just not fit to rule. Too emotional. For the sake of the country.
The government?
Oh, I'm sorry. If the government's listening, I am just joking. Don't tell my dad. So for the sake of the country and his people, the king sent for her at once. When the king of Spain got the letter, he bit his nails and rolled the paper into a ball and threw it into the corner and just like huffed and puffed. The princess came out from behind her ivory screen and was like, "What's wrong, royal papa? You seem stressed." And he was like, "Ugh, yet another king is declaring war against us unless I send you to help his ailing child." Like, whatever. And he's like, "It's not right. I'm not going to keep sending you away to do these things." And she was like, "No, I'm going to go. Thanks. Be back soon." And so her journey took quite a long time, but she soon arrived at the prince's private chambers. He was still looking at the doll and sighing deeply, murmuring, "Oh, what a beautiful doll. If this is the doll, just think how wonderful the mistress of this doll must be." But he was so feeble. He had to lay down. He couldn't hold his body up. So he was like looking at him from laying down, and he could only whisper the words. Like, his voice had gotten so hoarse and weak that like it was just coming out as like a low whisper. So the princess came out of the room and she went to the king and she was like, "I'm going to have you close us up in this room for 3 days. Got it?" And she says, "Lock the doors. Don't come in until I call for them to be opened again." And she also said, "Every day, leave some food for me to give him daily." And she said, "In 3 days, I will bring him out alive and well or dead." That's a quote.
Again, I feel like there might be a preference.
Either alive or dead.
It's the two things he could be.
They did everything she asked, and she sat with him, feeding him chicken broth sip by sip until he got a little stronger. And so when he regained his voice, he was able to say more loudly, "Oh, what a beautiful doll. If that is the doll, how much more beautiful must be the mistress?" And at this she cried, "Ah, wretch, so it is you who've got my doll." She was waiting to fucking slap him. And the prince raised himself up on his elbow and said, "You're the owner?" And she was like, "Yeah, so eat some fucking chicken broth, you thief."
And he's like, "Wow, I really thought you would be prettier."
Well, he'd be nicer for sure. So he did. And when he was able to get out of bed, they called through the door to his father that he was cured. The king and the courtiers came in and carried the prince out to his people, looking even more handsome than before. And everybody cheered. And they're like, "Yay, one day you can rule." And the princess took her doll from the mantle and hugged it lovingly because she had missed that damn doll. When the prince came back, he told her he was in love with her and asked him to marry her and be the queen when he became king. And she was like, "Okay."
But she already has a crown.
Yeah, but now she has another one.
How many crowns does this girl want?
I don't know, but she seems a little evil. The king was delighted to have such a wonderful daughter-in-law, and he showered her with jewels. They wrote several letters and sent them out with a trusted messenger. One of them was sent to the king of Spain, telling him that she would not return to him as a daughter, but one day she'd come back with her prince to pay her respects. Another was sent to the king whose daughter she had cured. And no other letters.
What?
They never sent it out to her biological father.
What?
Yeah, that's fucked up. What's happening? She talks about him constantly.
What the fuck?
I know. And the last line of this story is, quote, "At the time of the wedding, which was one of great splendor, all the monarchs came together and helped to make the princess's good fortune complete, and she lived in great peace and happiness till the end of her days." The end.
Squawk.
Squawk, squawk. Give me a cracker. Okay, so those are the three tales from Tales of a Parrot. According to the intro of this story, Tales of a Parrot is thought to originally come from a lost ancient Sanskrit work, and according to this book, has been found in folk recitals from Indonesia to Italy. So it's like all over the place. Quote, "There is a derivative Sanskrit version, the 70 Parrot Tales. Many of those stories, told by a parrot to divert his mistress while her husband is away, are found in the medieval Seven Wise Masters, which circulated for centuries in Europe with a popularity second only to the Bible."
Oh, word.
Yeah, so this is like a really well-known collection of tales. These ones that I told you today were collected by Giuseppe Pitre.
Aww.
In Sicily. So, like, shout out to Giuseppe Pitre, who comes up again and again. More than 100 years ago, and he apparently heard it from a peasant. What makes this important is that even though there are hundreds of folk tales like this one, this is thought to stem directly from the Sanskrit version, and it's not from an Islamic source like Turkish, Arabic, or Persian, which all have their own collections. So this is specifically the Sanskrit version.
That's interesting.
A 14th century Persian book called the Tutinama, which directly translates to parrot book, was published. It held 52 stories told by a clever talking parrot each night its mistress's husband was away. Every night, the beautiful wife is about to sneak out to have an affair, and the parrot's like, I've got a story! And it would tell her a story to teach her a lesson about why she shouldn't fucking do that. So it's a lot like Scheherazade, where she's, you know, wasting time by telling these long tales every night. But it's a parrot who's like, don't step out, you bitch.
Hilarious.
Several copies of the illustrated manuscript of the Tutinama survive. The most famous made for the Mughal Emperor Akbar over the 5 years after he ascended the throne in 1556. And this particular manuscript was illustrated by two Persian artists named Mir Sayyid Ali and Abdus Samad, working in the court workshop. Very famous. Here's an example of what it looked like.
Oh, beautiful. It's pages of a book with Arabic text, mostly in black, and then there are a few words that are in blue or yellow, which is very cool. And the illustration is gorgeous.
It's very Persian. The Persian artwork is truly unparalleled. Like, it's so detailed, and it always tells a story, and it's so colorful.
Yeah, it's a very cool, like, a lot of really cool patterns and, like, geometric shapes, and I like it a lot.
Yeah.
It's really pretty.
And it's of a woman who is dressed up very fancy, and she's pointing at a parrot in a cage. So clearly she's getting told a story. So these stories were said to have greatly influenced Akbar, who was, again, an iconic ruler. Iconic might have not have been the right
icon.
Word. He was an icon. And he's like one of their most famous rulers. But according to someone who I love, who was writing for Wikipedia, they said this. Quote, it is also inferred that since Akbar had a harem of, like, women, siblings, wives, and women servants, the moralistic stories had specific orientation towards the control of women. Mm. So they were pointing out, like, yeah, this was meant for a woman to keep her inside.
Oof.
Yeah. It also feels worth pointing out that the surviving artwork is not in India. Most of Akbar's version is in the Cleveland Museum of Art, and a large part of the other copies are in the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin. So none of the original Persian artwork is in the country where it was from. Mm. And nobody mentions that, but I thought that I would mention that because that's fucked up.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it. I will say, with the idea of controlling women, this is one of the stronger female characters that I think we've ever had on this podcast.
Yeah, she uses explosives.
She not only uses explosives, but the king of Spain's like, I don't want you to go. And she's like, I'm going, goodbye. Like, she does whatever the fuck she wants. And she also chooses her own father. There is the kind of the idea of, like, found family in this where,
yeah,
for whatever reason that's not explained, she decides to never go home, you know, and she makes a life for herself other places. She has power and agency. At one point, she reveals she has super strength, as well as being very cunning and being able to, like, think on her feet and figure out what's wrong with people when, like, all of the other men around her who are professionals don't know what's going on. She's like, let me just, like, stake it out for a while. my way of handling this is I want to spend 3 days just observing, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really fucking cool.
I agree.
Yeah. So I really liked these tales. I love the idea of a group of ancient tales that are told by a talking parrot. I think that's funny.
I'm wondering, I was just thinking, I was like, why a parrot? That's so weird. But a parrot repeats things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the idea of, like, folklore is repeating what you've heard.
Yeah.
So it's like the parrot being like, oh, I heard this story somewhere, and then tells you the story.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I like that a lot.
That is absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know what that parrot's name was? Alexa. I'm kidding.
Lady Alexa play.
All right. Well, that's the tale. Thank you, Jenna, for sending that amazing tale. And I linked the free version in the bio, as well as a link to the book that if anybody wants to buy it, it's on bookshop.org. Are all of our tales.
All of our tales.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. I like that one a lot.
Me too. Guys, if you want to see pictures like the one that I shared with Max, and I guess that's the only one, a picture of Max's book, which is lovely, maybe some screenshots from our versions that we watched as a child of Thumbelina, definitely check out our Instagram. It's at Sort of the Story. And we also have a TikTok at Sort of the Story. And you can email us at sortofthestory@gmail.com. How many more times can I say that in this episode?
Sort of the Story, Sort of the Story, Sort of the Story, Sort of the Story.
Woo! You can also go to our website for, because somebody mentioned, it was Gothic Pirates on our Discord, sent a screenshot because their friend, like for our, I think it was for our April Fool's episode, they were like, listen to the most recent episode, it's Twilight themed. And their friend was like, it's hard to tell what any story is because all their episodes are named something like Dingle Man Comes to Steal Your Kids. And I laughed really hard, but also I was like, damn, that's a good title.
Pretty good.
I would name an episode Dingle Man Steals Your Kids.
But, classic Dingle Man.
But we also do recognize that it is hard to find your favorite stories. And there is a way to get around that. And I put them in the website. All of the stories that we tell are named in the actual website. You can go down and it'll link you to the episode, you know, number and where you can find it. So
yeah,
do that. You can also search by location if you're like, I know it was an Italian story. We have that listed down there for you as well. So you can search for them. And you can also ask us whenever you want.
Yeah.
We'll help you find it.
Yeah. Send us an email. Hit us up on Discord.
Yeah. Honestly, the other Discord members are better than we are.
Yeah,
and they are faster than we are at finding that. So join the Discord for that. They are a wealth of information. And you can do that by joining our Patreon. And the link is in the bio. And my birthday is coming up. Next week is my birthday. And for my birthday, I want us to hit 100 reviews on Apple Podcasts. So please rate and review this podcast. Leave a little funny little line to tell us what you like about it. And if you don't like it, don't review. I don't want it. That's a bad birthday present.
Bad birthday present.
Yeah, don't give a bad birthday present. Give us 5 stars. Thank you. And with that, Max, do you want to head on out of here?
Yeah, let's get out of our house.
Woo! Oh, out of the house.
No, I was kidding.
Okay, we're going to get out of our house.
No.
Okay, everybody, have a wonderful rest of your week. I'll see you when it's my birthday time. Bye.
Bye.
Here is the toughest tongue twister in the English language. Are you ready?
Yeah.
To read this.
Oh, am I doing it?
Yeah, okay. I want you to do it.
All right.
The top one.
The sixth sick shakes sixth sheep's sick.
Now say it. Three times.
The sixth sick shakes sixth sheep is sick. The sixth sick shakes sixth sheep is sick. The sixth sick shakes sixth sheep's sick.
It's really good. Yeah. This is, and oh, that's how you open the Chamber of Secrets.
That is how I open.
Well, accidentally casting magic spells over here.
Classic.
The one underneath is, if you must cross a coarse cross cow across a crowded cow crossing, cross the cross coarse cow across the crowded cow crossing carefully.
That feels like a line from Letterkenny.
It does. And also, it is not hard because the k sounds are easy to say.
Yeah.
The sixth sick shakes sixth sheep sick. The sixth shakes shakes sixth sheep's sick. I slit the sheet. I slit the sheet. The sheet I slit, and on the slitted sheet I sit.
What?
Yeah. Read this one, the green one.
Six sick hicks nick six slick bricks with picks and sticks.
I'm gonna give you all the S ones because I have a lisp. What's this one? Brisk, brave brigadiers brandish broad, bright blades, blunderbusses and bludgeons, balancing them badly. These do sound like Letterkenny bits.
Mm-hmm.
This is just Letterkenny.
Yeah. What is it? Season 3 that opens with them just going through the whole alphabet with...
Oh, they do that a couple... They go back to that well a couple of times, which is how I knew that I was actually happy they were ending the show because they kept going back to that. And I was like, you know, it wasn't so...
The first time it was hilarious.
Well, the first time it was okay, but it was like, this is a clever opening. I'm fine to sit through this, you know? I say
oh, I
after
love
we
it.
Continue to prank them with Twilight. Oh my God, it's Tom Riddle. He's here to kiss us? Weird.